allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, then we're calling to order the workshop this morning with the Volusia County School Board, and our first item on the agenda is the superintendent search and information timeline. So with us this morning is representatives from the Florida School Board Association, and I will let each of you introduce yourselves, remind you we are streaming via the internet, and glad to have you here. We've been looking forward to this day for quite some time, so we're glad you're here.
Well, thank you for having us. Is the audio on? I can't quite tell. Okay. Yes, I'm Andrea Messina, the Executive Director of the Florida School Boards Association, and it is certainly my pleasure to be back with you here today. With me are my colleagues, Dr. Bill Vogel and Mr. John Reichert. Throughout the morning, and I promise not to let it go more than 2 hours, Mr. Chair. We've got a number of items to review with the board. First is what we call our pre-search interview, and I will be leading that portion of the conversation. Then we're going to move into the timeline, and Mr. Reichert is going to be leading that part of the conversation. He's going to be leading it's the timeline as well as advertising. Then Dr. Vogel is going to be leading the part when we talk about the community participation, minimum qualifications, and salary. So those are our sort of list of items to go through today. You all received in advance a copy of what we typically use as we call it our pre-search interview meeting. We have found that some general discussion about the school district prior to launching a search is beneficial for the community, for us as your search consultants, and for people who are interested in applying for the position. So that's typically where we start. And as you can see from the attached agenda, we have some internal things, some external to the district things, some board superintendent relation pieces. So we'll just go ahead and move right through that if it's okay.
Please do.
All right, first we want to talk about the district guiding principles, the vision, the mission, and the beliefs. And the reason we want to start with those is because we like to make sure that as a board and as a community and as a district, everyone's clear what the district's vision and mission is, and where would we see that if we were a community member? How would we interact with it if we were teachers? If you guys could kind of help us get an idea of the focus of the vision, mission, and beliefs in this district. And while you're talking, I'll be taking notes, so my typing doesn't mean I'm ignoring you. Anybody?
All right, so when it gets to our vision, you have that written down what our vision statement is, I believe. So that's kind of a clear-cut item there. And I believe in our mission, too. Isn't that a written statement in our policy handbook?
What level of commitment does the community have to this vision and mission?
Well, I could tell you that when they, when I think Ms. Cuthbert and Ms. Wright were both on the board when the strategic plan was, so it would probably be better for me to stop talking and let them get and talk to you about the process that they used and the community involvement. So, Ms. Wright, maybe I'll let you start.
Sure, thank you. Good morning. Ida Wright. When we first started this process, the community was well engaged. Each board member identified five members from within the community to serve on as their representative in helping to create, design, come up with the framework, and help finalize what you see as the product now. We also had district staff as well as our representative from then. It was it's now VUE, but from our teachers' union and from different parts of the bargaining teams. Actually, we're at the point where we are supposed to be reviewing. It is time for us to look back at our strategic plan because it was from a 3 to 5 year period. We're running up on the fifth year real soon, 2020. And so we will probably start in that process again with each board members, if we all agree, to have our same or come up with five representatives to look at that. But it actually was created with the aid of community partners, and each of us identified. So it was about 25 people that was on that committee, including district staff and various other entities.
Do you have a process where you review it annually and update it? I'm looking at, I pulled it up here and I look at it. So I think one of the things that's important to us is, so a new superintendent and the board would probably work together to review the plan and possibly update where needed, is what you all are thinking?
So that's a great question. So yes, we do. And actually, I think we really did great this year because that's how we restructured our superintendent's evaluation based on the strategic plan, the goals, and put some measurable teeth to some of the things that we know we wanted the superintendent to achieve.
Excellent. That's good. That sounds good.
Yes, when we redid, as chair last year, as we redid the superintendent's evaluation, I'm Linda Cuthbert, we had the strategic plan right out in front of us, and we patterned everything with that, and we worked with our school board attorney, Ted Doran. Along with that, I would like to include, however, in the external responsibilities, roles, and relationships, our unions.
Under internal, where it says teaching staff and support staff, that's mm-hmm. what the expectation is, that that is the union.
Oh, okay, support staff. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for that clarification.
Yeah, we put it that way because some people have two separate unions and some people have one together. So if we just put the union, some districts get offended by that, so we just put teaching staff and support staff. You have two different unions here,
yes,
correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Andrea, if I could just add that the board has, discussed that perhaps when we hire our new superintendent, that would be the time to develop the new strategic plan because it seemed like it'd be odd to do that right now and then have another person, and we want to certainly get the input from the new superintendent as well as everyone else. So, when you're advertising or when you're talking to applicants, if they should ask that question, I think that's the way we feel, right, that we would want to develop that strategic plan with the input from the new superintendent.
So somebody with strategic planning experience would be of great assistance.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is real helpful for us because this is something that we would put in there, and and when we're doing surveying so forth and seeing that would be someone, that would be a quality that we'd want, someone had some experience in working with the board.
Yeah. Ms. Haynes and then Mr. Cologne had a question.
So, stating that experience in that would be good, but I don't think for me that's a deal breaker.
Right.
That doesn't have to. If they don't have it, that's not a deal breaker.
Correct.
For me in considering something.
Yeah. And Mr. Clone, comment. Yeah.
And I'm going to go back to your question. So I actually had to go look up the district mission. Recently we were in a meeting at the School Board Association. It felt really good to be able to say, I know what our vision statement was, ensuring all students receive a superior 21st century education. However, that's, and we're going to be doing this. To me, that is so broad that it doesn't really, that's like saying I want everybody to feel well today. And so with that being said, again, it's just so broad. And then our district mission statement, Volusia County Schools will ignite a passion for learning by providing a challenging, creative curriculum in a safe, supportive environment where students reach their highest potential. That's cool. Again, just to answer your question, because I actually had to look up the mission, which is, case in point for myself.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons we ask the question, because if board members aren't clear on the vision and mission, then it really means that it's not secondary in all the conversations. And that's why I asked the question about the schools and the community as well. In some districts, the schools, each school probably has the vision and the mission right there, and when they do their SAC meetings, they might start by saying, hey, this district's vision and mission is blah, 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 and when board members go out and speak to Rotary Clubs and Kiwanis and things like that, they start with the vision and mission so that everybody kind of knows what's happening, and I just wasn't sure the degree to which the vision and mission in this county has penetrated all of those partner and entities.
Ms. Cuthbert.
To assist Mr. Colon, one thing, we did put in 21st century education. We are now one-fifth into the century. So one thing we might like to ask our new superintendent, what vision does he or she have for the 21st century? So it is broad, and maybe we need to put in a different adjective or a vision of what the 21st century should be in a word or two. Because we were told when we had our workshop 4 or 5 years ago, it needs to be broad. Mm-hmm. It needs to be just a very simple one statement, and then the mission goes into further detail. But maybe that 21st century, I would like to know what really that is. Because when we developed it, 21st century is fairly new. It's not as much.
Right.
And we have established, especially since we are building 21st century schools, but actually what do those new schools look like?
Good point. Yes, Ms. Wright.
Yes, but I agree with the chair. I think we should just wait for that component.
That's right, mm-hmm. With the new superintendent.
Because again, once you start changing and thinking of changing, education changes every year. And we have policies that change every year. So keeping it broad just protects all of us. But I think it would be good just for us to wait until...
Yeah, it's not going to matter. Yes.
But this is what we have right now.
Gotcha.
And it was community engaged and even our areas of focus. As board members at that time, we kind of sat up on the sideline and mm-hmm. allowed... We had people from Rotary. We had people from education, higher ed, community business people who all said, well, you know, if we had to focus on something, we want to drill this down, what would be the areas? And those became the areas of focus. And from there, we kind of took it under our wings and start developing that out. And then allowing the guiding principles actually came from the superintendent. That did not come from the board or strategic plan. We allowed the superintendent at that time to say, well, how would you decide how to implement that? And so from there came his guiding principles and some measures of how we would achieve the goals that we set out.
Yeah, that's pretty thorough. Yes.
And with that being said, I think with our mission, we're probably a 7 out of 10. I think that is on a lot of our documentation. And like I said, having been in a room full of school board members and being one of the few ones who could actually say it, that means it's repeated enough. As for the vision, I would... And you all can correct me. I'd say we're probably a 2 or a 3. Most folks probably don't know our mission. It's on paper. And so I think your point is well taken that, you know, in order to know where you're going, why we're here, should I say, you know, we have to drive that as far as, and that's really so.
And he's correct. So we all know the vision. We don't emphasize that much on the mission, but we do look at our vision and the superintendent's at that time, his guiding principles. That was the driving force for the district.
All right, so let's look at some of those strategic plan priorities. That's the next category that we have here, and we're looking at maybe the top 5 completed and or in progress strategic plan priorities, and then I'm going to ask you about some unfinished priorities because these are going to be the things that are going to be put on the table of the new superintendent. What are some emerging issues that you're seeing, and then what do you see as some challenges? But we'll start with, let's talk about those that have been completed. What are the successes that you've seen strategically in this district?
Okay. Ms. Cuthbert? I'll let you.
I have seen... We passed a half-cent sales tax.
Okay.
We are using it to rebuild or build new schools. We have already completed 1 elementary school in Pearson. We have almost phase 1 in my district almost finished, Chisholm Elementary. We have a master plan for already we've raised parts of George Marks Elementary in Ms. Haynes' district. We're looking at the master plan in Mr. Colon's district with Deltona Middle. as well as we discussed about combining two elementaries into one on Beachside and Mr.
Passing a bond, I mean, getting a bond.
Persis' district, yes. So we are moving very successfully in that direction of rebuilding and putting those schools, building them as hurricane shelters, as top safe schools and secure schools, one entry, only single point entry schools, to meet the new demands of safety and security as well.
Yeah, go ahead. Mr. Colon or Ms. Wright? I don't know who was first. Go ahead.
You're right.
Okay. So just looking at what you have posted on our screen, so I'm going to start there with curriculum. Yeah. And so we said performance targets. Some of them we have met. And so if we look at academic improvement for all students by enhancing academic relevance, rigor, measure by increase in the performance of targets, we can say that we've gone through many of these. Have we achieved all of them? The answer is no. So in CTE, increasing program offerings and enrollment in the career technology, we have increased. The question is, have we seen an increase in our students passing of the end of the course exam, the CTE exams? I don't think we've seen the increase that we desired, but we have seen an increase. I'm not sure if we made it to the 2% or the 3% mark yet.
Yeah.
Expansion of post-secondary curricular offering available to students, including but not limited to dual enrollment, transition fairs, and summer programs. I would say we've met that. Expand access to virtual learning labs. We have done that because we put that in all of our high schools. So we have achieved that. Again, there are some other things we wanted to include in that, but we have met that. So if we go through what we've actually written, I think that we may have to just come back to you on that. But I think we should go through what we have written and say, okay, we've met this, we have not met that. I can tell you some of our performance targets, some of our strategies that we would probably have to look at, and I'm going to use one for instance. Align instructional plans developed by coaches and teachers with school improvement plans and district strategic plans. That we may have to go back and have a real discussion. One reason being that before we decided to go with textbooks this year, we had modules.
You had what?
Modules. Learning modules.
Modules, okay.
The learning modules did not produce what we were hoping that they would. And part of the problem, they were never fully developed 100%. The question is, did we provide resources? And one of those down there, you know, make sure you gave, we gave the resources. I'm not certain why we never developed them 100%, but we did not, which then causes some problems, as we saw last year when it came to our school grades, problems we're seeing now as school grades come up. So the district did take a proactive move, the curriculum department, and said, well, let's go with textbooks, because what we thought was going to work did not work. But the question is, did we achieve the goal? And the answer is no. But what are we doing to correct the problem is something that we got to be very clear that this is the actions that we've decided to take after going this route for 2 or 3 years and on and on and on.
Yeah.
I yield.
Yeah, Ms. Cuthbert, yeah.
Okay, and I need to clarify why I said half-cent sales tax in the building. We are building schools to encourage this learning, the new cooperative learning, learning labs, wider hallways, to create more of an academic atmosphere in our new century. We have communal areas. There are more conference areas. There are student, more areas where parents or professionals can work one-on-one with students, more meeting places. Our media centers and cafeterias are closer to the parking lot, so parents can come in and learn about what their students are achieving. So it's to encourage PTA meetings as well as SAC committees. So I think if we have a facility that embraces learning, hopefully this will follow.
Mr. Colon?
So looking at these here, I'd say that curriculum, quite frankly, is a blank slate right now as far as elementary goes, which is where most of our challenges are right now. And so the fact that we are, like Ms. Wright said, the fact that we are implementing the textbooks now, Have we reached these targets? Well, we changed our game plan. So, again, I think it'll be essential that we align our new game plan moving forward with the changes that we've made. These seem to reflect the goal then. Are there other things that over time, the digital learning and all of that we have accomplished? The answer is yes. Can I give you the numbers? The answer is no. I don't know the exact numbers. So, like Ms. Wright said, this is maybe something staff can quantify whether or not the metrics actually reflect that improvement, which goes back to this being a living document in that, we should know that, even if on a quarterly basis, we're this much further to doing that and what our plan is to improve each of these areas. In my time on the board, which has been a short time, I've never seen this come up before us as that, so, again, we're in an organization, typically usually this in an organization is a document that sits on the bookshelf. But if you really wanted to use this as a living, breathing document, so again, curriculum, I think that we are almost there. Internal and external communication, that's always been our challenge. That's the reason we're sitting here today. Human resources, we are extremely challenged on, and I would probably guess to say a lot of these have not been met. Fiscal management, I trust Deb Mueller, and I don't have, that's Ida's neighborhood there. And operations and infrastructure, I'd say we've done a pretty good job. I think Mr. Aiken's done a great job as far as operations goes. I mean, I can go in line for line. It's not something we've done in my time on the board, but I'd be interested to see what the feedback would be from staff to see what we have accomplished and what we haven't. But again, curriculum, I think that one is a blank slate, yay, for the things we did accomplish. The first thing on there was, we're going to be an A grade. We're not there yet. But more importantly, I think our student, aside from looking at the school grades, our student performance is lacking. And so that's where I say this is a kind of a clean slate for the new person.
Ms. Wright.
And what I would like to say, often our workshops are supposed to reflect that. I think we have to be a little more, maybe give some better direction to say, if we're going to talk about curriculum in a workshop, tie it back to the strategic plan, a particular whatever it is, be it one of our goals, provide the matrix to it. But I do believe what we have asked as far as our workshops, they are supposed to tie to the strategic plan. I just don't think we tell them tie it and show it where it is, because that is our purpose.
Yeah,
that was our hopes.
Yes, Dr. Vogel. Yes.
Have you had an opportunity to review all of the categories on the assessment system and how Volusia is comparing this year, maybe in the past?
I haven't looked at it this year, but normally I will go, and I'm probably, the three of us are probably more familiar than our new two members. So, again, I think that's something that we would have to know as the board changes. That is probably one of the first workshops to really go through and make sure they understand.
That would be good, because all those, you could benchmark off of what you've done over the past years by using those categories, and maybe that's something you might want to tie in the strategic plan. That'd give you some accountability.
That'd be great.
I also want to throw out there, while I'm thinking about it, this year coming, we're adding 30 minutes to the elementary school day.
Exactly.
So you may want to
all get elementary that, schools.
Yeah, all of the elementary schools would be adding.
Was that paid for by the half cent sales tax as well?
I'm sorry.
No.
That was not funded through the half cent sales tax.
No.
That's just a strategic priority.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So that would be considered a success too. I think.
Yeah.
Any more instructional time? We're trying to make
sure.
Sure.
And also, in the last, you all helped me out here. I think was it 2 years ago we introduced the Cambridge ACE program.
Yes.
So that's a program that we implemented a couple of years ago, and I think it's expanding even this year,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
So that's another, I think, another positive for the district.
Any other big successes you want to report?
We mentioned a little bit about the academies and how they've grown.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, exponentially. I mean, we have so many from the time of what, 4 years ago? That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have about...
We just had a couple, like three or four.
And not just high school. We've added some, but not just high school. I think our major commitment to middle school, because now what we're doing is offering academies in middle school to feeder schools, so that students that attend, and I'll use my two schools that attend Campbell, that will be going either to Mainland or Atlantic, because we do have open enrollment for high school, but now they've been exposed to some of the academies in middle school, so they know where they're going and what they think they may want to do in high school. So I think it's not so much a high school, and we did expand those programs, but middle school is where we made the significant change.
And we have a tremendous business partnership with
Advent Health.
Sure. Yes, we do. Yeah, we should be very proud of that. Yes, Ms. Haynes.
I feel one of the other successes that we have that no one's spoken about yet is what we did for the safety and security piece. I believe the school guardians, because I've been out on the campuses, I've met these ladies and gentlemen that have been trained, and they've gone through extensive training, and they're on all of our elementary campuses and half of our middle school campuses. These individuals take their job role. You know, they're very responsible, they're very professional, but they've also built relationships with the faculty, the students, and even parents on those campuses. And I actually am very pleased with the guardians that we have on campus. I feel to some degree they're doing a much better job than what anyone would have ever expected. And the fact that there was planning and they trained additional ones so that if someone is out sick, you know, there's an emergency, coverage is always provided at those schools. And I think that that's a huge success, because I think across the state, everyone has not been able to meet that, or maybe, you know, didn't take it as seriously. And so I appreciate the fact that we've placed school guardians on campuses and with the training they've had. I think that's a success.
Good point, Ms. Wright.
And my last point. But the most part, we're financially sound. Most people want to walk into a district that are not had that.
That's an important one.
That's right. Not experiencing. We say we have a deficit, and we normally start that way. We always have a nice size surplus, 9 to 10%, and we normally meet the school board standard of having at least 5% in our reserve. And so when we look at the fiscal part of our district, we are fiscally sound.
You know, that's to be commended, especially because you don't have the additional millage,
right,
from what I understand. So that's
yeah,
excellent.
Yeah. And I think it's good that we have a contract with our union. We're in the second year. We have a 2 year. Things are good. We have a good relationship with a teachers union and the other ones. So, these are all positive, because, you know, some districts, that's not the case.
That's correct.
There's always a battle going on every year. So we should pride ourselves in that. Yes, Mr. Fuller.
And as a closing thought, you know, one of the things as we looked at our strategic plan recently, you know, we said, and I pointed out, you know, this has, just so you see how times has changed, this has no mention of social-emotional learning, no mention of mental wellness, no mention of school hardening, because in 2015, that was unfortunately not a topic of discussion. And so, or fortunately and unfortunately for some of those topics. And so, again, this, you know, in my view, you know, a lot of what we're doing is around those areas. So, you know, again, for that new superintendent, this is kind of going to be we're not boxing him into a strategic plan that was just made last year, versus he'll have the opportunity to help us develop that, which is huge.
Yeah. Now, some of the things that you all have mentioned, just so you know, I've kind of bumped into the immediate because it said unfinished. And based on what you said, I kind of put some of those in my immediate box, if you will. But looking out 5 or 10 years, what does this board want the strategic plan goals, main big hairy audacious goals? What is this board looking at in 5 to 10 years?
Ms. Haynes, I'll let you start.
So I want us to have a very stable curriculum department and have clear priorities, resources, and materials that we are offering teachers. But along with that, I want a very clear professional learning plan. And I want it designed in such a way that if it's an experienced teacher, then they're getting professional learning that's going to meet their needs, versus if they're a brand new teacher in the door, that we're making sure we provide them with the professional learning that they need to get started. And in years past, we've had that. And granted, it was a long time ago, but I think we kind of moved away from it. We can't lump everything together into, you know, one size fits all. So I'd like to see us moving towards that, because I'd like to be meeting the needs of the teachers as they walk in the door, or those that have been here, because they're the individuals on the front lines. They're the person that makes the difference with our students every day. And I need them to have the resources and the training that's meaningful to them for them to do their best job. And to me, that's a long-term goal. And I'd like to see us get there. And I'd like to see us be, once again, one of the counties in the state that has that best plan. You know, and people want to come here because they're like, Volusia County has got the right resources, they've got the right training, and, you know, their teachers are doing great things because they're working together as a team.
Yeah, thank you. Any other yes? Hey, Mr. Colon.
Operationally, it's my opinion that we're running 72 different organizations right now. And so operationally, we have policies, but we don't have any procedures. We don't have procedures that help an AP know what to do in a certain situation. And so with that being said, I think that from an operational standpoint, I'd like to see us become more standardized in our practices and more centralized in areas that need to be centralized, i.e. human resources and curriculum. Right now we say we want you to achieve a better school grade, but we don't really tell them how. And folks have to come up with their own strategies on how to do that, where more of that direction could be where we're all headed in the same direction for the same mission, and I think that goes back to that. So operationally, that's a big thing for me.
Yeah, thank you. Ms. Wright?
Two, and both of them actually tied to both of what you said operationally, which goes into succession planning. We need to have a real clear succession plan of who, what, where, when, and how. And that is something we currently do not have, a true succession plan. Each department, even the role of superintendent, being a deputy superintendent, whatever we may need to do, we need to have some clear outline of the roles. So that's succession plan, that's HR, that's policies and procedures. And number two, I want our district to reflect the community they serve. We do not reflect the community we serve. And as everyone else is fighting to make sure that they become very diverse, at every level, the district should do the very same thing. They should become equally as diverse on every level.
Ms. Cuthbert, did you have a comment?
We have some excellent schools with excellent leaders, but not enough. I would like every single one of our 69 schools and our alternative sites to have engaging, student learning first leadership. Sometimes we have leaders who blame performance, not ill-gained performance, on the fault of the students. It shouldn't be. Everyone needs to be held accountable, and everyone needs to do what is best for the student in the classroom. I would love to have more professionals who have an innate ability to teach, whether you're an superintendent or a para, a clerk. Doesn't matter who or what we are, we're all student-centered. Communities should be able to be welcomed and open arms into our schools. I would love to see, now I don't know how this would work, I would love to go back to the time where a voting precinct could be at a school, where, and I have talked to Lisa Lewis about it, students should be able to see the political process in their own backyards. I would like for them to shadow our maintenance workers, our plumbers, our electricians. The student has an interest in an occupation, why not shadow one of our own workers? Let's set up a CTE plan for that internal working together. If someone wants to be a teacher, shadow that teacher. Let's do some internships, because we are a community within ourselves. We touch everybody. We're a restaurant system. We're a daycare system. We have finance and maintenance. We have operations. We have bus drivers. We have union representatives. We all need to be able to look to our district as a microcosm of the world. And let's create our own, view of the world right here and right now. I don't think enough is said about the people who really make our district work. It's our bus drivers, our substitutes, our maintenance workers, our facility people, our skilled workers who really do all the groundwork. I mean, we can't get to school unless that engine is working. So I would love to have, I think it kind of more philosophical. I work for Volusia County Schools, and I'm blasted proud of it. That's what I would like to see in 5 to 6 years. And we are working in that direction. But we need, right now, I think some people are going, I can't wait till I retire. And I would love to see that go.
I guess the point I would add is looking ahead and the emerging trends with education, I think we got to be at the forefront of those. There are so many ways now that children can get in education, and I just don't see 10 years from now it's going to be in a big mortar building for everyone. I mean, I think that trains are already left the station, and I think we need to understand that there are other ways to learn and provide students and their families as many options to get the type of education that they want. We face the competition of charter schools, private schools, home education, visual learning, all those things. And there's going to be other kinds of things. And I just see that the way children are coming into our kindergartens, already knowing how to use iPads and iPhones and just everything else. Now, I mean, just think 10, 5 years from now, there's going to be so much more. And we can't play catch-up to do that, because the other institutions will be ready for that and offer more entertaining and more exciting ways for their children to learn. So I think public schools, with the tremendous staff and talent that we have and the resources, that we should be like the best, like the most, you know, just the most exciting way to receive an education is through public schools and all the different ways that public schools can provide that education. So I would like to see a superintendent who is really innovative, really futuristic, really isn't one that, you know, has a great reputation of the way we used to do things, but has given evidence that this person is in the future. He is thinking of things that we haven't thought of yet. That's the kind of person that would really excite me, and I think excite our community. We want that, like you said, Mr. Cologne. I think when Mr. Egner was interviewing, you said, wow. And I would like a person, whoever it is, for me to go, wow. That's what I want.
Proactive.
Yeah. And I don't want to cut anyone off. Ms. Cuff, what did you want?
And another thing that's very important that helps progress. I would like not only professional development to improve for our teachers, but also professional development for administrators as well. They need to know the latest language, what the kids are saying. What are the latest threats to our children's safety? And it's just not keeping up, I understand, but also looking to the future, especially in technology. We really need a superintendent who understands the correct use of technology as a tool, not as a dominant factor, but as a tool to encourage learning. One thing that I saw that when we were looking at curriculum, and it said about teacher in our CTE classes, for teachers who teach the certification classes, we need to increase our performance. But a lot of times those teachers are kind of squeezed into other departments. Like we have one digital tools or research in the middle school, and it's squeezed under social studies. That needs to be under CTE, or it needs to be reorganized so that those teachers understand clearly what their standards are, what is their curriculum map, to direct those middle school students or elementary students in it. We've done a great job, I think, in incorporating STEM into our elementary schools. We have definitely one elementary school, and that is Edgewater Public, is a first STEM certified Florida, in the state of Florida, STEM-certified elementary school. But where do we go from here? Once we don't want those curriculums to be stale. We also need someone who has a vision of our digital and technological vision as well, not just to keep up, but also what's coming down the pike. So thank you for bringing that up.
You're welcome.
I'm going to jump to the external roles, responsibility, relationships, because I want to know areas to continue, areas to strengthen, specifically starting with your congressional delegation. What is the interaction that you all, this district, has with your congressional delegation?
Mr. Colon.
And so I will tap in there. I think that we definitely have opportunities to further include them. I won't forget the session on retail politics that the young man from Broward County did at the Florida School Board Association website. I will tell you that as far as our congressional delegation, Michael Waltz has visited one of the schools in my district. He has gone to one in Jamie's district. So he's kind of been everywhere. With that being said, I think that that relationship is better. As far as the senator goes, I know Barry Cotton from Senator Rick Scott's office has reached out, and we've given him the information. They reached out to us for the information on Mr. Eggener, phone number, contact information. As far as county government goes, I'll let other folks speak to that because I don't have enough of a history on that topic. Municipalities-wise, I can tell you in my area, I've worked really hard to get a lot of my commissioners involved. I think as a whole globally, you know, we've had the meetings in the different areas. We could probably continue to do that. I'm sure most municipalities would welcome the opportunity to give us feedback on what they feel is working and what is not working. In my area, I can tell you that the West Volusia Chamber of Commerce, as well as the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, have been very engaged. They're working in some of our schools now for some career and training opportunities. Economic development, I know Mr. Jerry Mays is part of both of our health academy boards at my two high schools. Faith-based, other than the faith organization, I don't know anything in my district that we do tied into the churches other than they all have my phone number and have no hesitation to call me. And other community partners, I don't know what that means. So I think, you know, I can speak for my district. I think for that part, we've got a lot of this covered. I don't know about anybody else.
Yeah, I think that you know, we, all of us, have the support of our chambers. We're very fortunate to have cities to, we've had some joint meetings with cities. We are continuing to do that. We have plans in the future. I think those have come out very, very positively. Our legislative delegation appears to be in touch with us. We don't have the lobbying effort that perhaps we used to have 4 or 5 years ago, because when we cut back staff and so forth, so that was kind of added on. And perhaps that can change in the future to, you know, put more emphasis there. We have a good relationship with our county government. We kind of go hand in hand with them. They they try to support us when we can, and we try to support them. Faith-based, well, when I think the word faith, I think of faith, and we all know that that we work with them, and we are working hand in hand. And I think externally, as Ms. Cuthbert said about the half-cent sales tax, which the voters have approved twice now, two times, and I think from the public, we are very, very happy with the amount of support that we have received.
Do you have a council of local governments that meet monthly or regularly?
We have the mayor's, what's it called, Ms. Wright? It used to be called the mayor's table. Now it's the elected officials round.
So school board is part of that?
Yes. That's good. Yes.
So the chair and the superintendent.
That's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that
elected officials round table is what
yes,
you call
and
it.
That's a monthly that's meeting, correct, Ms. Wright?
Yes, that is
yeah.
a monthly meeting.
Monthly right. meeting.
Yeah, a lot of districts don't have that, so that's actually very good thing. And sometimes the faith-based communities, and I'm trying to dig around here because I haven't had a tangible example of something here, but in some communities, it's the faith-based community that might do the weekend backpacks of food for schools or summer food or anything like that.
So, go ahead, Ms. Haynes.
Actually, we have a large summer feeding just for Volusia County that we do. I believe it's 56 schools again this summer are sites where kids 18 and under can go mm-hmm. and get breakfast or lunch. And we also support some of the groups that use our school campuses, and we also do the feeding for those programs like the extended day or the summer rec programs. Our Schoolway Cafe does a fabulous job of getting the word out there and making lots of areas available for children to be fed during the summer. Some of our faith groups also do that, but what we found is schools are easy for most kids to get to, or parents know where they're at, so they're getting there. We do have a lot of external groups do the backpack giveaways. Some of them are private, non-for-profit organizations. Some of them are our city groups, like the DeLand Mayor just did a backpack giveaway this past Saturday, which was largely attended. But we also have the Food Brings Hope, which we have several of our schools designated as Food Brings Hope, and that's where those students are getting the backpacks of food to go home and or they're feeding. We're feeding every child breakfast at no cost if they come in currently. Lunch is a cost if you're reduced or you don't have free lunch. But then we're also feeding supper at quite a few of our schools. We have the supper program, and our own Schoolway Cafe is doing that. So I feel like we're trying to make food available and that not be a deterrent for why a child's not ready to learn. And our group is on board with that.
Yeah, I was thinking when you said the backpack thing, it made me think of the Jewish, Volusia Flagler. Jewish Federation have been providing backpacks for, gosh, as long as I can remember, thousands of them, thousands of backpacks.
It could be clothes. It could be shoes. I just know different districts have different.
Yeah, I mean, loaded backpacks,
sure.
Full backpacks. Yes,
wow.
Yes, Ms. Cuthbert.
I represent Southeast Volusia, and our churches are extremely giving. We're not as well endowed with businesses, but all the businesses, from the largest Boston Whaler to the smallest individual private owner, always contribute. And it's not just beginning of school. It's Chick-fil-A giving out their gift certificates. It's awards night. And plus, we can't forget Adopt-A-School that Bob Davis, who's a trustee on Daytona State as well as the executive director at the Daytona Motel Hotel Industry, he created an Adopt-A-School program. Almost all of our schools have been adopted by someone in the hospitality industry, which enhances our schools' programs. And we have, as Mr. Persis said, we have met with municipalities. Everyone in my district has met with the school board. We even had a meeting last year with Daytona State so that we all can talk to one another, all the institutions. We have... There's a Stetson University, which is right down the road, has a lot of their educational interns come to our board meetings so that they understand the political network. Many of us are in our schools. I know I thrill fourth and fifth graders because I have two phones, you know, a private phone and a public phone. I belong to two chambers as well as education committees throughout, and I think all of us do that. So the more we get out and promote our school system, you know, the better we are. Volusia County, and it's a shame we are so impoverished, so many of our, and we're a serving community. We're in the serving industry. We still have the largest heart, I think, in this entire state. And one thing that we have that I think so few counties have is the heart that is here. I don't care what your business is, whatever color you are, religion you are, everybody pitches in for our students. And that is always, always wonderful to see.
I did just some research while you were talking. They've been in the Volusia Flagler Jewish Federation. They've been doing it for 23 years.
Oh, wow.
And they started the first year serving 30 children a year. Now they serve 7,000 a year. So it's really grown. Yes, Mr. Clark.
I think, in my opinion, to sum up the external factor is our mission their mission? I think we could do a better job at that, where it's not just we work with each other when we stumble upon each other, which is usually we're working on an issue, versus having that proactive, aligned relationship. I think we could do better at that with all of these groups listed as external. You know, I think right now, as everybody is, we're all very busy. And obviously, you know, the district staff has a lot going on. And so sometimes it gets easy to lose some of this.
Yeah.
So I think it's something, and that's something I'd like to see, you know, our superintendent be more engaged in the community and be a part of these things, so that when we have an ask, it's not an ask. It's, you already know these are our challenges. You've been here. You've been to our schools. It makes it easier. So that's my thought.
All right, let's move to internal roles, responsibilities, and relationships. Specifically, I've heard some of you mention already the administrative staff and wanting some additional training and support and visionary leaders in there. But tell me, what opportunities are there with regard to the administrative staff? Are you going to be losing a lot due to retirements? Do you have a young staff, just in general?
Yeah, well, we have a young staff, for sure. And as Ms. Wright alluded to, a lot of people left at the same time. There really wasn't a
secession plan. So that wave has already moved through Volusia to a large degree.
Yeah, yes. So we have a lot of young principals. We have a lot of young assistant principals. We have we don't have the staff and haven't had the staff to provide them the training that they could have used along the way. And so when you don't have training, mistakes happen, and mistakes sometimes lead to other mistakes. So whether we need the professional training for our teachers, as Ms. Haynes said and Ms. Cuthbert often says, but we also need it for our principals and upcoming principals and assistant principals. That, yeah, we could use some shoring up there, for sure. Yes, Ms. Wright.
And I agree wholeheartedly with Mr. Persis. And part of it, I think, when we had such a major exodus, putting the right principal at the right school in the right environment has been our challenge.
Yeah.
And so with that, it is important that a new superintendent, first of all, is probably a good reader of people and understanding and willing to understand their skill set. I may be a good leader, but I may be a better leader in this environment versus putting you where I need you. And if that's not your strong suit, then we have pretty much set you up to fail.
Yeah.
And so we got to be able to read between the lines and really align people with the right skill set to be in the right place, but then develop them. And so hopefully, be it he or she, the superintendent, will have an idea. And they may come from a district that actually has something set up for that. I know there are other districts that have strategically mm-hmm. put in place where they've hired some former principals who come back on a consultant, so we don't have the overhead to work with new principals to help. And those principals have some, you can look at their background and know they're strong, they're good, they're diverse, to come back in and help with our principals, because I think that is our critical, if we had a critical area, it is in our leadership team. And I'm not going to say it's the leadership team's fault or even our fault. I just believe we got ourselves in a crunch where we didn't do, again, we didn't plan for it, and we did not put the right measurements in place to make sure that when that time arrived that we were prepared and they were prepared to step into their roles.
Yeah. Okay. Well said. Mr. Cologne, or Ms. Haynes. Ms. Haynes, go ahead.
And I actually agree with them because I've been here for so long. We all knew it was coming. And we didn't prepare for it. We knew that there was going to be a mass exodus of people retiring. But beyond just the school-based leadership teams, I think that needs to also carry over to the district leadership areas, because I think even at the district level, we need to, if we're going to put someone in a role of leadership, we needed to have provided them leadership opportunities and training and being leaders. Because it just doesn't make sense. I mean, you would not take your medical assistant and tomorrow make them a doctor. Just like we really take a teacher and tomorrow make them a district leader or, you know, a principal, makes no sense without those opportunities. And we've not had a great structure, and it's not the fault of the individuals that are being placed in these positions. We've not provided them with those opportunities they need. And then when you place someone in a position that they're not prepared for, you're already setting them up to not be successful at times. People can have great common sense, but that, you know, it's not innately that everyone can lead. And so I think we need to look at that.
Mr. Cologne.
So I'm not going to echo what they said, but I wholeheartedly agree. I think our bench is empty right now. I think that we are recycling a lot of our help because we have nobody else. Again, they mentioned there was very little structure in how these folks were exposed to the different roles they would eventually walk into. I'd like to see, and this is where I think that fresh set of eyes is going to come in. I personally believe that right now in our district leadership opportunities are subjective and not objective. It's who you know. And with that being said, I think that having a structured program that gives everyone an opportunity and a defined ladder on advancement and leadership will make us a top district, because folks who are looking for leadership opportunities will come here because there is a ladder that is visible rather than one that has two steps that you can't see, but nothing you can't see above it, and who knows what's going to happen from here up.
Right, right.
So that's, you know, and I've had lots of conversations with Mr. Eigner about that. We don't have a principal's principal. We don't have an assistant principal's assistant principal. We don't have, you know, I'll give you an example, TOAs. You know, our TOAs, I had one TOA basically tell me I'm short of the custodian because I do what nobody else wants to do. But in a year, we may call on this person to be an AP, and they don't have all of the opportunities to have learned all of these areas. And so, again, I think, you know, building up our bench, and, you know, there may be 10 folks who are good at right field, but we need somebody also on left field. And so you've got to recruit that leadership as such, or start to prepare some of those right fielders to, hey, if you're going to have an opportunity, you may need to start learning how to play left field too, because that's where our biggest, mm-hmm. and so that proactive, systemic approach to leadership advancement, I think, is huge for us.
Ms. Cuthbert.
Do you have an administrative association?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You do have an administrative association.
You belong to it.
What? I used to.
What is the relationship with the board and the administrative association, or what kind of interaction is that?
We have a decent relationship, but they too are new. That's part of the problem. It's not a lot of depth in our organization, and that's where we're finding our challenges.
Yeah. Ms. Cuthbert, go ahead.
Okay, to be more specific, since I was elected in 2014, I've been advocating for a peer system for administrators as well as for teachers. So when someone, it could be a brand new teacher or someone new to our county, we have brought in administrators from out of state, out of county, new administrators. They need a peer to say, okay, this is what is occurring at my school, or it could be a different department, different grade. I need to go to someone who is non-threatening, who's not going to be on my evaluation form, and to get through. I want a peer system. One of the greatest relationships I've had is that gentleman in the back who is now a union official, and I was his peer teacher at New Smyrna Beach High School. He taught math. I taught English. I mean, I didn't quite understand a whole lot what he said, but I was able to help with his mannerisms and to turn around a little bit more and look at his students. So, but we were able, you know, we were able to work. And now we still have this relationship. Relationships have to begin somewhere. And I do believe we need a peer system. I was able to get a welcome wagon started a couple of years ago. We did not have it last year. I would also like to see our teachers have a little more input. Yes. Into our school district. They need to have a voice, and not just, I mean, the union is one voice, but a lot of times this is what's not happening. This has happened to me and I don't like it. I would like a proactive source. Where can teachers go to say, and not just a suggestion box, but I see waste in this one area. I'm on bus duty. I see the buses arrive. I've noticed a few things. Where can that teacher go to make constructive suggestions? And also, I would love to have more student representation at the district level. It would be nice. I mean, there's a student council on all the campuses, especially the secondary, but is there a student representative forum at the elementary level? Can they contribute their voice to the principal? I know you can have a meeting or a lunch with the principal, but it's usually done with an individual. There should be a student council at all of our elementaries as well. And we should have a student council come attend our school boards. We need to hear from them. I did have until June when one graduated, but I have 6 grandchildren who are at the secondary level in our schools, and they give me an earful about what's going on their campuses. And I wish all of them, all of our students would have input, not just on the clothing they wear, but the operations they see, how their administrators interact with them on campus, what programs that are working well, and what the kids are saying and doing. They're the ones that are going to tell us, you know, is there drug activity? Is there wonderful input at prom? You know, it just, we need more input from our teachers, from our students, and please set up. We definitely need a peer system where our employees can seek assistance without, you know, the threat of evaluation.
I'm going to move to the teaching staff.
It seems like, can we, Andrea, because I'm kind of like watching the clock too, and I don't know where we are, but can we just segue into all the rest of those bullets right now, teaching, support? If board members, you have a comment about any of those, teaching, support staff.
We want to know sort of what is the current status. Do you have a bunch of positions that were left unfilled last year? Are you able to fill all your positions? What's the recruiting and what's the relationship with your unions? I've already gotten some information on that.
Yeah. Ms. Haynes?
But wait a minute. Did you have a question?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you have a council of student governments where they all meet once a month or quarterly together?
No.
Chairman and the superintendent?
I would love to see that.
Okay.
No, we're
trying to respond
that.
To that. Mm-hmm. And then there's input that goes back to the board.
Yes.
Right, because some districts actually have that.
Yeah.
They have a representative who comes to the board meeting.
Yeah.
But no, we do
not.
Yes.
Follow up on that.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Do not have that. Ms. Haynes.
So we had a lot of positions last year.
Okay. Teaching positions?
Teaching positions that were not filled with certified teachers. I think each one of us has expressed this year, we don't want that. We do not want to start the school year off with vacant positions. And listen, I love substitutes. You know, when you get up one morning and your child's running a fever and you need to take them to a doctor, you need a sub. But we should not have substitutes filling in for the entire school year in classrooms, because we've then let those kids down by not giving them a certified teacher. And so I think we all feel this way, and maybe we do, but my priority is we start this year with every classroom with a certified teacher. I don't want 100 positions or 150 positions. I don't even want 30 positions left where those kids don't have a certified teacher. Because at the high schools, sometimes what's happened is we've just gathered them all up in the cafeteria or auditorium, and there's not even anyone at all in front of them. And so, you know, that's our first line, and that's the line that needs to be filled. We need a certified classroom teacher in every single classroom, in my opinion. And I don't care what it takes. I don't care if it takes the entire HR department. That's what they have to focus on to make happen. It needs to happen, because that's our first responsibility of why we're here. Before we fill anything else, I mean, yes, we need to fill the bus drivers, all right, because they're going to get them here. But we, in my opinion, we don't need to fill district positions until we have classroom positions filled.
How many classroom vacancies do you have right now? Do you know?
Well, the last time we had a report, we had around 200 vacancies in the summer.
The start of this year?
Yes.
200, but
200. I don't know what it is at the moment.
In the pipe.
You got a regular update on that?
Yeah, we should have one later on today.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get another update.
We do not have centralized hiring, though. And I think that that leads to an issue with filling these vacancies. Because then sometimes it's just, oh, well, you know, when we ask the question, it's like, well, we didn't know here in the HR department, you know, the principal didn't tell us that they have a permanent sub or whatever in these classrooms. So I agree with centralized hiring. Because I think someone needs to be responsible for keeping track of all of this and ensuring that we have the correct people in the right spot, and that what they're hired for, they're doing, not having been moved to something else then that they're not qualified for. One thing that I'd like to say is, you know, 32 years ago when I started as a teacher, I was very fortunate to walk into a situation and teach with a variety of teachers that had everything from being, you know, 30 years of experience to 5 years of experience. And there was great dialogue. And they embraced me as a new teacher. And there was, I felt secure and safe. You know, I felt safe that I could ask the questions I needed to ask. They could provide me with the information. At the same time, I felt safe to share ideas and things that I had just walked out of college with that were new, that maybe they hadn't thought of doing. And I need us to get back to that, because I think, unfortunately, what's happened with testing and the grading and all of that, we've kind of created a competition piece that's happening in our schools. And competition's great in sports. And I'm all for we're working hard because we want to do well collectively. But I don't think competition between teachers benefits our children. I think teachers need to work together instead of, you know, Ida and I being in competition as fourth grade teachers. We need to be sharing and working together, because I've always said this, even when I was a team leader, if you take six minds and put them together, what you can accomplish for those students is so much better than everybody trying to do it on their own. And I'd like us to culture that.
Okay. Moving on.
Anything else that needs to be said about the teachers' union, support staff union, that we need to know?
And so,
go ahead. Yes, Mr. Colon.
The way I see it is, you know, and the union is not one voice; it's a lot of voices for me. And I listen. You know, I talk to a lot of teachers. I'm not a teacher. I've never been a teacher. I will probably never be a teacher. Or a principal. And so I, as someone who's not in education, rely on going to teachers. And when I say teachers, that includes the union, that includes classroom teachers. I'll ask them, what's the one thing you wish you had that you don't have? Just, and first they look at you crazy, and then they give you a laundry list of it. And so I think that, you know, having a superintendent who sees all of our stakeholders as far as teachers and all the different unions as a voice for those folks matters versus someone who's adversarial to helping us accomplish our mission, because the truth is they are here to help us accomplish our mission and we need them. You know, the times of, you know, teachers being a dime a dozen are not there anymore. In fact, teachers are hard to come by these days. And so, you know, ensuring that we have someone who could listen to their struggles and help them overcome that is huge, because that's what's going to keep them here. You know, better working conditions, et cetera.
Ms. Wright.
And so we've talked a lot about teachers, but let me talk about support staff. Yeah. Our support staff, if nothing else, just want to be recognized.
They do.
They really do. And we have started to do a better job of recognizing our support staff, but whoever assumes the role of superintendent, be it he or she, they are such a key factor, because most of the time they do the jobs nobody else wants to do. And we need to make sure that we always recognize and praise them. We may not have a lot of money, but we need to be fair with them financially, but we just a simple thank you.
Is there anything we need to know about the relationship with parents or guardians in the district? Is it a positive relationship? Things move well? Do you have like a district-wide PTA?
Yes.
You do have a district-wide PTA?
We do have a Volusia County Council PTAs, and we have PTAs in individual schools, not at every school, but I would say most schools. Yes, and we have district-wide SAC. Committee, and we have school advisory councils in every school.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Colon.
I'd say, you know, our relationship with our parents after the what we went through with the school times change and all of that, I think that there is a little bit of distrust right now. However, and I think that is something that we do need built again. Another thing I'll say about your parents, I think a lot of that goes back to socioeconomics. Most of our parents go to work and come home in our county.
Right.
And so the level of engagement is could be more if we gave them the opportunities to be more engaged. Will that include everybody? No. Which usually makes two or three folks really, really loud. Because, and in the end, they serve as the voice of the county. And, you know, I think we have better opportunities to be that voice rather than depending on other folks to do it, because otherwise the parents would know nothing.
Ms. Cuthbert.
Oh, go ahead.
I have two things. I have always been a union member. I'm a member of the Volusia United Educators Retired Group. I'm supported by our unions in my election. To me, it has to be a teamwork. And I think we have leaders now who really want to work with one another. There are some counties who have no problems with union, and the union, we need a lot of trust. We need openness and trust, especially when it comes to negotiations. I think we have had problems in the past because one group, maybe the district, didn't trust the union, or the union didn't trust the district. I think we have a new leadership with VUE. There's a sense of trust. There's a newness. And that president needs to work with our new superintendent. I also want them to click. Part of the interview process, I would like to see Elizabeth Albert part of that interview process to make sure that our teachers and our support staff are represented, and that she has input in our new superintendent. So there is harmony and there is cohesiveness within our district, because we're all in this together. And second of all, I would like to see more of an emphasis, especially when we're talking about support staff, on the importance of the person, the first person the community meets as they enter one of our schools, and that's in the lobby. That person right now is paramount when it comes to safety and security. It's the first point of entry. It should be, I think, well supported financially, and also they also need a little more training. I don't want them, we need good people, well educated, well spoken, considerate, because they're the first contact with the community. So I would love to see their salaries increase. I would love to see more, not to be taken so much for granted, because they are so extremely valuable. So our new superintendent needs to understand, and I think they all do, but how our schools are open to our communities, because that's the first central point, and that's such an important part.
Ms. Haynes?
So, as I said, a success I felt was the school guardians and what we're doing with safety and security. I also feel, though, that there's a piece of that that we've not been successful with. I think, to some degree, we took it to the extreme, and we forgot that the children on campus belong to the parents and guardians. And I think we need to find the happy medium of, yes, we're keeping our school safe, but those kids belong to that parent or guardian, and we've got to build that relationship with them. Because there were times this year that incidents came up to us where a new family moved in and they went and registered their child, and when they went to take the child to their classroom, and I'm talking especially about elementary, okay, a first grader, they weren't allowed to escort their child to their brand new classroom where they're going and to meet that teacher. Okay, that's, I can't live with that, okay? Because granted, I taught at elementary, but I taught at high school. I personally, as a teacher, want to meet that parent also. And so, yes, have somebody escort them or whatever, but we can't take away the parents' rights of what they can and cannot do and be involved. And I think we need to work on building that, because I think we lost some trust this year. So we need a superintendent that understands the parents' role in the education process, as well as our role of keeping them safe and secure. But how do we merge those so that we get that parent on board and build the right kind of relationship with them from day one? When our kindergartners are going to be coming back soon, those kindergarten parents, it's important that they be able to walk that child to that room. Now, I used to teach kindergarten and tell them, you can bring them to the door, you can see the room, but then you're going to exit, because this is really what's best for your child. And if you want to cry, you know, you can do a boo-boo breakfast for them or whatever, but that relationship has to happen. And I feel like we, maybe in taking the safety and security piece, we've taken it to the extreme, and we've forgotten the parent's role of being the parent of those children.
All right, we have 5 more minutes in this particular section. So for the board superintendent relationship piece, one thing I already heard was that you've already sort of reassessed the evaluation instrument to go along with the strategic plan, which I think is really strong. I know that in our what I heard you guys, the kinds of questions I heard you ask during the interim interviews gave us some insight. So if each of you could just give me one thing that you want us to know about your expectations for moving forward with the board superintendent relationship, we can just kind of do a quick round robin, and then we'll be done with this whole section and we'll move to the timeline.
Who wants to start?
Go ahead. Quick.
One. Quick.
I want an educational leader, a visionary, someone who has excellent relationships with all of our stakeholders, someone who's engaged and involved in Volusia County.
Okay, but that doesn't speak to the board superintendent relationship specifically.
But see, as a member of the community and a member of all of those stakeholders, I'm one of those stakeholders.
Okay.
So I want someone I can talk to and discuss my district with. And overall, and talk about my vision as opposed. And I also need someone to assist me in saying that's against the law, or we can't financially do this, but we can do this. So it's the working together. I want someone to work with, but also an open, honest relationship. Someone who can say, Mrs. Cuthbert, I think you're wrong. However, this is how we can make you see the right way.
Okay. All right, Mr. Colonna. So that was one.
She asked a question. You can't tell an English teacher.
That's right.
An effective communicator who's willing to make us part of a process so we can work as a team.
Yeah, excellent. Ms. Haynes.
Took yours.
Yes.
Took
mine. That's why he spoke first.
Well, between Ms. Cuthbert and Mr. Colon, I think they got it. Go ahead.
I agree. The effective communicator listener part was very important to me. But I also need someone that, when need be, can make the tough decisions and own the decision that they made.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Ms. Wright and I, we were both nodding our heads when you said that.
A decision maker. At the end of the day, you have to make decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. Problem solver, you know, someone that can help guide us through all these minefields and that are out there. We need direction and someone who, you know, has that ability to not just placate us individually, but then also can be tough enough to say, this is what we need to be doing. And, you know, just say it, do it, guide us, help us.
Perfect. All right, so we're going to transition into the timeline, and I'm going to let Mr. Reichert lead that section of the conversation. So, Mr. Reichert, could you move to the timeline for us, please?
Thank you. And, honey, I think they have a copy of our timeline, that our draft timeline, not our timeline.
I'm not sure I do. Is it in here?
No, it's on your computer under Board Docs.
Board Docs. Okay.
Again, I apologize. It will not be our timeline. It will be your timeline once we wrap it up. Really, just honestly, what I did, I started with, you know, our target date of January 1 to have the new superintendent start. And I did take a look at your existing school board meeting calendars and work calendars. Also, I looked at your school calendar, you know, the opening of school, when teachers come back, those things, in developing this calendar. Again, not to read this word for word, but the first two or three meetings, if you'll notice on the left, the July 29th and August 5th, those may be new meetings for y'all or workshops that we would have to establish. But I think in the short window that we have in getting ready for January 1, 20 start date, is there's a lot of upfront work that we need to do with the board to kind of get your direction, your input, and then it really kind of gets into more procedural, operational stuff after that. So I believe I'm correct in kind of saying that the July 29th, August 5th, and August 20th would be new meetings or workshops we'd have to work on.
And those dates aren't going to work.
Okay.
July 29th is not going to work for us. One, we don't have the 7-day to advertise it, but we could call it a special meeting, and that would be the deal to advertise it.
I think
days.
You're not in.
Yeah, I'm not here July 29th. Oh. I'm not
in.
But
that's why we wanted to move it to the 30th, the same day Deb is going to be doing her special meeting.
Her budget, yeah.
And that way you guys will all be here anyway. And we're probably going to be doing a special meeting on the 30th.
It's July 3rd.
July 3rd.
So we can change the 29th to the 30th?
If that works for everybody.
When is the principal two-day workshop?
July 29th and the 30th.
How long will the superintendent be? Oh, Mr. Eggener doesn't have to be here, correct?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Weren't we supposed to do something?
Just say hello. That's it.
Oh, okay.
That's all.
All right. So what time is that? I'm trying to just make sure we have time.
I'm trying to get a time from Deb right now. Because
I'm not
sure.
I thought yours had to be at 5:30.
Ours would be held at 5:30.
Okay. So we could hold it any time earlier then.
Absolutely.
Can we come at 1?
How much time do you need for this?
I'd like to block off about 2 hours, maybe just a block. We probably won't need that much time, but at least have
I don't think you'll need that much time. Yeah. So you want to say 3 o'clock, 3:30?
Let's do 2:30 just in case we need a break. So 2:30?
Yeah, we'll need a break. 3 o'clock?
3 o'clock. Let's do 3 o'clock. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So July 30, 3 o'clock instead of July 29, TBA.
And we're going to call that special meeting.
All right. Instead of workshop, work session. Got it.
Instead of workshop? It's going to be a special meeting. It's going to start at 3.
time certain, 5:30.
You can't advertise hers yet?
Like, well, I can't advertise hers yet because we're still waiting on information.
Well, we were waiting for two board members to respond.
Well, I didn't respond because when Carl responded and said he needed it at the 30th, I'm fine with, I mean, I had both dates, so it didn't matter to me.
Yeah.
And I know I did not respond. I had to pray about it because I'm on vacation, so I had to see if I wanted to come be bothered with you all on the 30th, but I will do that. Just being honest.
Just get back.
No, I was on my vacation. I was
so wait, let me back up the bus here a little bit. Why do we need to call it a special meeting? Why can't it just be a workshop?
We don't have 7 days to advertise it.
Why can't it just be a workshop on the 30th?
We have to advertise it for 7 days.
But if it went out today, would it not be 7 days?
We can't get it in the newspaper to advertise it right today.
Okay.
So it won't be in the newspaper until
30th. No, I understand that part. Yeah. I'm saying you're saying it's going to be a school board meeting?
It's going to be called a special meeting, a special school board meeting.
And it can't be called a... Why can't it be called a special school board workshop?
Well, because we need a special meeting for Deb anyway.
First has to be called a meeting.
Yeah, what I'm saying is...
Because then we're separating it.
What I'm saying is, listen to me, I want this part, this piece, to be just a workshop, not a school board meeting. And then Deb's piece, like originally, was going to be a budget hearing. That's totally separate. That's a special... meeting.
You can't do it.
Why not?
Because you don't have enough time to advertise. Special meetings don't require the 7 days.
So what? So there's a difference between a special meeting and a special meeting workshop?
There's no such thing as a special workshop, at least as recognized by law or policy.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, I want to help you in any way I can. No. What is the difference? Just one, you get to vote, and the other one, you don't.
Right.
But...
And when we have the school board meeting, we have public participation. There's a lot of things. When we have a school board meeting, there's certain protocols that are involved in every school board meeting, as there are protocols for the workshop. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah,
I want to move the workshop, you know, quickly and deal with one topic.
Well, because we're not voting on this part, we don't have to give the public input until it comes to Deb's vote.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to give it at the beginning of the meeting.
Oh, I understand.
We can give it for Deb's part only.
Well, it's neither here nor there. If that's what we got to do, we got to do. So we do it.
Sure.
Moving on.
Mr. Chair, yes. This would maybe help. If we talk about a few things today, like salary range and things that Dr. Vogel will bring up, potentially, we could combine things that are tentatively we're looking at for July 30th. We could go to August 5th if that August 5th is a date that we can meet.
We would need to meet August 8th if that's available for everybody.
Is it available for you all, August 8th?
And the reason being is people are on vacation.
Let me check something.
Okay, so what you're saying now is to we would not have to meet on July 30th and just have it on August the 8th.
That's what he's suggesting.
Right. Mr. Chair,
yes.
If possible, I would rather meet on July 30th since we already have to be here because I will not be here August 8th or 5th.
Okay.
So, I will be here August 5th.
So then the question becomes, could we combine August 5th to August 30th?
I think we could.
Yeah,
okay.
We could
do that. Right. If we have a good 2 hours on July the 30th.
Yeah, plus we still have time today.
Yes.
We're not cutting anybody off today.
All right.
We want to do 3:30.
So if you combine both, how much time do you need?
I think depending on what we kind of get, because there are some things today that if we can confirm, we'll already start bringing back to you on July 30th, maybe a draft advertisement.
Okay.
There's some things
awesome.
We can work on. Yes.
All right, then let's do this, just so that we're not crunched here. Since we're going to combine both now, maybe we can start this at 2 o'clock.
True.
Okay? Yes, and this way we'll all have plenty of time to...
2 o'clock on the 30th.
2 o'clock instead of 3 o'clock.
Okay. And we're eliminating the August 5th meeting altogether.
Yes. Good thinking. Okay, should we continue on with the timeline?
Please,
okay.
If we can. August 20th, I put in just as another date for the board to maybe meet and just close out any pending items that we might have. Typically, in doing these timelines, if we put this on as an item, superintendent search update on your agenda, if it's needed, then it's kind of, it's on the agenda, it's pre-advertised. If it's not needed, there's nothing there we need to talk about. But it's always good to have kind of a little placeholder in case we need any formal action or any kind of direction from the board, if we could do that on August 20th.
We don't have a meeting scheduled for that day.
No, ma'am.
Okay.
It would be...
It would be just...
It would be a...
Kind of a...
A board workshop. Okay. I can call it a board workshop and advertise it in 7 days.
Yeah, we could call that one a board workshop, right?
Well, no, except he's asking...
Because it's before the press
conference. Couldn't call it a workshop.
Yeah. No, that's the next one.
Is that actually needed to be taken at that meeting?
I think maybe just consensus or direction would be good for us.
Yeah.
If y'all can give consensus on...
You need to set it up so that action can be taken. Because otherwise...
Say special meeting.
We'll call it a special meeting.
Exactly, yeah.
So that would be a special meeting.
Morning, afternoon, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
Morning or afternoon?
Yes, let's talk with on for you, August the 20th, we're talking about now?
Yes, sir.
What time of day did you all have a...
It's whatever your preference would be.
Earlier the better is probably for us, but we're open for you.
It's 9 o'clock, time, so. Okay?
Yeah.
9 o'clock?
Well, I think we should... Ruben, what's best for you? Because Tuesdays, I'm good.
It's you guys. You guys decide.
I mean, I prefer the afternoon, but okay. Depends on you guys. If you guys want to do the morning...
Whatever works for you.
Any time after 2 makes it fair. Gives me enough time to. These are all days I'm taking off of work in order to be here. So, any time after 2 is good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
So 3 o'clock. Is that fine with everybody?
3.
2.
3.
2 is fine. 2 is fine. 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. Okay.
2 o'clock.
We're
that's
back
okay
to 2.
Okay.
Because that would put us August 20th, a special meeting at 2 p.m.
And it, are you saying, though, that it could be that we won't need to even meet that day, that we could do it all on the 23rd? Or
no.
It's possible, but we were just talking about your portal for, you know, the community to have access to. We might want to, but there's a chance we could cancel that 20th.
Okay.
But I would like to set it up and have it.
Okay.
Yes.
So we'll just put it on our calendar.
Yes, sir.
And then you'll let us know.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Exactly. And then the August 23rd, we thought it would be an appropriate time to have a press release talking about the superintendent search, your online portal that would be available for the community to access at any time to keep up with the search process. If we talk about in the next couple of meetings that you would like an online survey where your community can access this district web portal and complete a survey of what they think the good qualities and needs would be in the next superintendent, what that person, some of the priorities they feel that person might need, and we would be able to kind of announce that publicly through a press release to open that up.
One thing we're also going to need is a brochure, and we would need to get started on that sooner than later. And so who would be the contact person? Because there's a lot of information that we would get. So if we could have
the superintendent.
Yeah.
Make
Kelly get started on that right now. Then we would probably want to bring that back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let me go back now. August 23rd is that a meeting or
no?
So
no,
you're
sir
just telling us that's the time that a press release would go out.
Right.
Okay.
And we can work with your staff to kind of, you know, helping us and assisting what would be appropriate to come out. If at the next workshop we have y'all approve the portal and the contents there, do you want an online survey? We're going to bring back a sample of that online survey for you to put on the portal if y'all choose to do that. And we can work on having all this in the press release.
Thank you.
It's like a date certain, so we have to back from
those other
meetings.
Yeah, that's great.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We'll try to give you the draft handouts, too, that we're going to ask for action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. August 28th.
August 28th, I believe, is a meeting that y'all already have agendaed. And again, no?
And I need that information 7 days.
Okay.
It's a 7-day.
7 days. Okay. And again, this is a meeting that right now there's no specific item that we are specifically asking for to be approved. But again, if you could just agenda it as superintendent update, superintendent search update. If we need something, we can plug it in and we'll get the information to the clerk before that time. If not, it'll just be no update at that meeting. But at least it's agendaed, it's publicized. If we need
so board members, so you have on your calendars, right, 5:30 school board meeting, July August 28th. And do we have a workshop, too, at 1:30? 1:30. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. And then, of course, August 30th, our advertisement would be posted. The application process would be open. And if you would just skip down to September 30th, that would be our advertisement close date. So we have this timeline where you have a month advertisement period.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
Yeah. September 10th, you've got a board workshop. Do you need that?
September 10th.
Yes.
Yeah.
Board workshop at 10 a.m. and school board meeting at 3:30. That's what I have on my calendar. Because that's the first Tuesday.
Yes.
Okay, so I would need 7 days to think about that.
Okay.
Okay, we're up to October.
Well, if I could jump back to September.
Okay.
There's two dates there, September 2019. One is for community forums, if you would like to have.
Which Bill's going to talk about later, what that might look like.
All right, so we'll jump to September the 30th would be our closing. I'm sorry, yes,
ma'am. I just have one question. So on August 28th, we already have a workshop and a board meeting, and you want to be added to the workshop, but how much time do you need for that on the workshop? Because we may not have a large enough window for the workshop.
We won't know until we've had these other workshops.
Okay.
Because it's almost like we put it there because if we get through everything, we don't need it. If we don't get through it, then we'll have a better idea of what kind of time we need.
Okay. And they want to be they want approval, so they'll have to be on the school board meeting itself if they need approval on anything that day. And that's just that meeting approval and discussion.
Our September 10th board workshop, which I think is one you all already have scheduled.
Yes.
We would talk about the finalist interview schedule. I think there was a board member that kind of talked about the union representation having some input into the interview process. We will have a schedule at that point that will outline what your three-day on-site interview process would look like, who would be involved, and we'll talk about all of that. At that
September 10th workshop.
If not prior to, yes, sir.
Okay.
And how much time would you need that day for that workshop?
I'd say an hour.
Maybe an hour.
So we may have to extend the time we have and come in an hour.
Well, that day it starts at 10 a.m.
I know, but if maybe we already put other stuff on there,
we'll
come in.
When it gets closer to that date, then Tim will tell us if he needs more time for the staff business, then we can start it at 9 o'clock, I guess.
I could move the agenda conference and we could go a little longer that day.
Yeah.
Because if we start at 10 and the board meeting then starts at 3:30 that day.
Yeah, we got plenty of time.
I can move the agenda conference if you want to be.
Okay.
And then the October 1 through 11, should the board elect to have a community screening committee?
Bill's going to talk about
which
later.
Which Dr. Vogel will address. We will have those two meetings during that time window. And then the October 17th date at the bottom of that page is a new date, I believe, for the board. But that is where you would identify your semifinalist after the screening committee, should you have a screening committee. And that would kind of be a new meeting. I don't believe, Connie, that it's on your schedule now.
Okay, I don't have anything on my calendar for October the 17th.
It's okay with me.
So that would be a special board meeting.
Special board meeting.
Okay. And then what time of day, board members, what's good? You want to do that 3 o'clock again? Is that
No, I'm good with anything. That's two, far out there.
If,
two, three, what?
How? Because you're coming from Tallahassee.
I won't be at all of these. Oh, okay. So these guys will be here for most of them. The semifinalist meeting, I probably will be here.
Uh-huh.
It's if I left in the morning and got here, that would be fine. That would
okay.
So Ruben is good. Is that good for you, too?
The 17th is a Thursday, correct?
Yes. I will say, because you are identifying semifinalists and it is a special board meeting, I don't know what time you typically have board meetings, but some board members, yeah, I was going to say an evening meeting isn't out of the question.
So I was going to ask, why could we not, is it October the 15th not available?
Do you know why October the 15th? It might be that we are in. It might be that we're in Escambia that day.
Oh, okay.
Let's just check.
No, we're, I think we're all right.
October 15th? Nope, you got.
Yes. All right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're available the 15th?
Yeah. Yeah, we're fine.
You guys already have a meeting scheduled that day?
No.
It's just Tuesday.
No, but I have another commitment. I have a standing on that Thursday.
Anybody opposed to changing it to the 15th?
Can we meet at 2 o'clock on the 15th?
Yeah, that's what
I'm Tuesday.
So 2 o'clock. October 17th at the bottom is changing to the 15th?
Yes.
And we're meeting at 2 o'clock?
At 2 o'clock on the 15th.
And this will be a special meeting?
Yes.
Special meeting.
Yes, because you'll be voting on the semifinalists.
Yes.
That's, we need a vote, so that's why it has to be a meeting.
Great. Great.
And then at our, on the second page of the timeline, October 29th would be a regular scheduled meeting for y'all that you already have scheduled, where you would identify the finalists for interview.
It gives us about 2 weeks to get information back from the semifinalists, if you want questions or videos or anything like that sent to you.
And I would need a 7-day leave
yes.
on that because it goes live 7 days before.
Okay. And we'll also have some discussions about the process to select the finalists following your interviews and also bring in some contract negotiation items for processing and discussion. And then we have set, we're recommending November 6th, 7th, and 8th, which is a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, for your on-site interviews by your finalists. And typically, if you have 3 to 4 finalists, you can do those easily in the 3-day window. Your first day would be interviews with the board as a total body and possibly community tours with each candidate that can be hosted by a staff member, or we've had them hosted by community members. They visit a school. This is kind of pre-arranged and pre-prepared.
Mm-hmm.
On the second day, we have additional tours and interviews, and depending on the number of candidates, we'll have either the Thursday afternoon or the Friday morning individual one-on-one interviews with each board member, which is an option that a lot of board members do. So the board would have an interview as a group with each candidate. And they may interview after your interview with other agencies that you would like to recommend, and then you'll have one interview with each candidate individually. That Thursday night would be your community reception.
Yeah, that sounds nice. Yeah,
McConnell. That December 6th, then, does that have to be a meeting since you are all going to be interviewing? That has to be a board meeting? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
So November 6th would be a board meeting?
Well, we have
a
DAC meeting at 5:15 on the 6th, November 6th, Wednesday. DAC meeting at Mainland at 5:15.
Can you just back up a little bit on this one? The 6th was the first day that the board as a group interviews the candidates. And do you allocate like one hour or what's a typical?
Hour and a half.
Hour and a half. All right.
It'll be very similar to what you guys did when you had the interim superintendent's candidates come in.
Sure.
Where the whole board will interview, you'll ask specific questions, that person leaves, take a little break, next person comes
the
in.
The next person comes in, and so they've been, depending on how many, if there are
correct.
3 or 4
that
or
determines the length
five,
of the day.
That determines the length of the day
right.
for us.
And until you decide the finalists,
we really won't know how
exactly
how many. But it sounds like that would be a meeting on November 6th that would likely start around 10 a.m. It'd have to start in the morning, at least plan on it. And then,
so, Mr. Chair, I will be out of town on the 6th and the 7th. I'll be back on the 8th. However, I'm willing to work with Andrea, and we can probably, any interviews that I do, make be a little bit unconventional, meaning it may end up being a phone one or something, because I'll be out of town.
Well, just want to make sure, though, that you'll be able to have the individual interviews.
Correct.
I mean, that's what you really want. Yeah, he needs to have that.
Yeah, really, if you have three to four candidates, if you don't exceed four, then you could have the candidates come into the district on Wednesday evening, the 6th. Have the full day of interviews on the 7th, and then Friday morning would be your individual one-on-one.
But if you're not going to be here on the 7th.
I could do Friday. Friday I'll be back.
We could flip it.
We could have the group interview on Friday, private interviews on Thursday, and we could work something out with Ruben.
I almost like that better because we have our individual interviews, and then by that time we've got our feedback, then you come back together. So it gives us a chance to come back
together.
Either way
is good.
So our special meeting would be the 8th.
Right, if under this circumstance, to help accommodate Ruben's schedule.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to do the individual interviews.
Thursday. So
and then the group interview on Friday.
Okay. And you can have your reception, your community reception, to meet the candidates on that Thursday night.
Okay. Let me ask you this then. I know this is way far out, but when we do the individual interviews, do you foresee that in taking place here and they just kind of rotate?
No.
Or how do we do that?
Five different
offices. Well, I didn't mean here, like in this room, but...
But
in this
facility,
we
would hopefully be able to designate five
offices
type or conference room settings where each board member will be stationed.
Right.
And the candidates, say you have three candidates.
Go around.
They would, and I'll give you a schedule. They would interview for the, they will just rotate around to the different board members for their interview. And they would, if you only have three candidates, then at 1 hour, two of you will not have an interview.
Got it.
Three candidates are interviewing here, but that will rotate, and we'll give you a schedule for that.
Okay.
And those are individual standalone interviews.
Okay, so that takes the meeting off November the 6th. We don't have a meeting then.
No, sir.
And we just have a meeting on November the 7th.
No, the meeting would be the group interviews, which is Friday.
Sorry,
Friday, November
8th. Yes.
So we really don't have a school board meeting or of any kind on the 7th.
No, sir.
That's
what
just
individual.
Individual
interviews.
Those are
the 7th?
Open to the public.
I thought that, the individual was going to be the 6th or the 7th.
7th.
Seven.
Nothing on the 6th. 6th is out.
They might arrive and somebody might
arrive.
Take them to dinner.
The reason we put the 6th
is
if you have a couple of out-of-state candidates, maybe, and you want someone to meet them at the airport, maybe take them to dinner.
Right.
We put that in.
Yes.
But I think when you see this interview schedule, and we will flip the Thursday, Friday, it'll make more sense. And maybe I can bring that back at our next meeting.
Sure.
Just
to
draft.
Sure. Okay, so they fly in on the 6th. We take them out, or someone takes them out.
Right.
7th, we're going to do the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 8th, we have the where they come in here.
Right.
And then on the 8th, we'll do that one at starting at 10 o'clock, we said. Is that okay? Ruben, is that going to work for you on Friday,
yeah,
the 8th?
Okay. You should probably
start
plan
earlier.
On a full day.
I'd start earlier than that.
Well, wouldn't that depend on how many?
But if each one's an hour and a half and you already have three, plus you need breaks in between and some lunch. It makes for a pretty long day.
I'd start as early as the board would like to start, can start.
9 o'clock, okay? Mm-hmm. 9 o'clock?
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
I think they want 8.
9 o'clock.
Don't
nine
pay attention
o'clock.
To me. I'm an early
nine
person.
O'clock.
I get up really early, so
9 o'clock.
Nine o'clock.
So on Friday the 7th.
Eighth.
Thursday the 7th, which is when we're doing our individual ones. I'm only traveling back from Wesley Chapel. And so if we could do the afternoon for the interviews, and or work it out for me either way.
Yeah, we'll put you at the end.
Then I could probably be here around noonish.
That's the 7th.
That'll work out really good.
And then, yeah.
Well, that would be a lot better than having to work another time on Friday or something. Okay. That would be excellent.
So here's a thought. You mentioned taking them out to see parts of the county or the schools. So what if Thursday morning they went out and saw that, and then we didn't do our individual interviews till Thursday afternoon? That way Ruben's back, and they get all of us as individual. And as soon as the individual interviews are over, you host the reception.
Keep in mind, each candidate mm-hmm. is going to need 5 hours.
Right.
And so typically, it's
an hour per, we're interviewing them for an hour individually?
One-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I thought first mm-hmm. somebody said 30 minutes. So no.
Mm-hmm. No, man, that's an hour.
You can have yours for 30 minutes. we're not gonna keep you in the
Most people
locked
want
door.
More, believe me.
Yeah.
But what would happen typically is in the rotation, and John will bring you that draft, we try to schedule it so when there is a free opportunity, like from the group interviews even on that day, they go out, do a tour, come back, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It'll take some adjustments, but we can make it work to where we're switching the days, and I think have an opportunity for each candidate to get out and view the district to some degree. In a couple of schools as well.
Okay. Kelly, you are keeping track of all this, I hope. Okay, good. All right.
She'll be in close communication outside of this.
Yeah. And we'll get futures involved with helping with this receptions and things, yes.
And that was one of the things I was going to say, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
If it would be possible that we actually conducted our interviews at the Olson Center, so that they will be centrally located between the two areas, because if you have everything here, it would be very impractical for them to really get to the east side of the district.
Well, but Daytona schools are available.
Well, no, but what I'm trying to say, so that they I'm sure all the schools are available, Mr. Malone, but I'm just trying to put in a central place that some of them may get a chance to see the east and others get a chance to see the west, and I think we have more movable and workable space at the Olson Center.
Oh, you mean for each of us to have our own office
right.
for the interviews, for
right.
the individual interviews? I'll kind of leave that up to the staff. Let's okay. ask them wherever there's the most space.
And in September, you'll notice on the September 10th date, we say finalist interview schedule.
Yeah.
So we'll try to get all this information before the September 10th. Then John will try to figure out how we can accommodate all of that. And you'll know in September what that
sure.
schedule is going to look like.
I understand what you're saying, though, Ms. Wright. That does make sense to be a little more central. Yeah. Okay, John.
Okay.
I keep us going.
All right. November 12th, after the days of interviews, the following Tuesday would be the finale where the board meets to select the new superintendent, following the interviews on that previous Thursday and Friday. And then November 13th, your contract negotiations start with the candidate you've selected, the board chair, and the board attorney. December 10th would be the board meeting to approve the contract with an effective start date. And then our transition begins and the start date of January.
And December 10th, we'll probably have a new board chair, too, because we'll have done the organization meeting.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then this person will know, he or she will know, and have the contract settled before Thanksgiving break, which
if
was...
If you guys stick to the schedule.
Which that was our goal. So then that person would be able to tell wherever he or she is currently working that they would, okay, they have this job, and that gives them plenty of time to give notice.
Really, Mr. Chair, what normally would happen is the November 12th, when the board selects their candidate, then the chair typically will go make the offer call at that very moment.
Like you
moment,
did before.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
And
okay.
Then contract negotiations start the very next morning.
Got it. Ms. Cuthbert. Yes.
Can I go back to November? We are hosting a get-together. It's like a community. The entire Volusia County community can come and meet the semifinalists. Do we have an idea of time or where, or is that yet to be determined? And I ask because there's a large community gathering in my district on that evening.
Which evening?
What night?
The 6th or the 7th?
The 7th.
Okay. What kind of community gathering is it?
Well, it's Police Athletic League, but everybody who's anybody is going to be there.
What time is it?
It's from 6 to 10. So, you know, people can select when they go, but it's a huge event, and it's only every other year. So I just wanted to let you know. I guess people will have to pick.
Well, they might be able to go to
10, but I'd just like to know that.
Is it just like people will come and stay for the 6 to 10, or will they come?
Maybe come and go.
Come and go? Well, that's normally what we have, too, is a come and go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good point, because we could have it the same night, but maybe closer. I'm not sure where your event is.
It's in the Brandon Center in New Smyrna.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay, so maybe the people could go. Is there another centrally located place that wouldn't be too far for them to go, so they might be able to go both?
Unfortunately, no. But we're just scattered. All of our districts.
Yeah.
We're not a condensed community, unfortunately.
We're large. We almost need that reception.
Don't worry about that.
I wouldn't worry about
that. We'll work it out. We'll work it out.
I wanted you to be aware.
Yeah.
And I wanted I wanted to recognize it for the community in my district as well. Brandon Center would have been a good place to host that.
What's the name of that center?
Brandon Center. It's right on the river.
So is it in New Smyrna?
It's in New Smyrna.
Okay, which is not really centrally located.
No. Not for Mr. Cologne anyway.
It's good you brought it up now, so that can be something you all think about because on selecting the location. So it would be someplace that could be drivable within a reasonable period of time from that.
The problem is we're spread out. Because my first inclination, which is what we typically have done, is you either hold something at DeLand High or you hold it at Mainland High because they're both kind of sitting central, east, and west. But we don't have anything in the middle. I mean, we hold a lot of east side events at Mainland High because that covers the east side and it's kind of central to the east side. We've held a lot of things at DeLand High because it covers the west side. We just don't have a central spot. And if we truly want our community and parents to have an opportunity to meet them, we've got to consider that.
Well, I will say in other counties, like in Osceola, we met at the State College there, had a facility. In St. John's, we've met at their technical center. So, I mean, you may have some other facilities that...
Well, it'd be like going to Stetson or Bethune-Cookman or, you know, Daytona State or Embry-Riddle.
We're still in two spots.
Right. There's nothing really in the middle of Lucia. It's this true
Speedway. Can we meet at the Speedway?
Was just going to say, when we did the interviews for the county manager, same issue. And the deal is, you have it somewhere, and those that want to go are going to go, and those that aren't going to go.
As long as you can
It's not like it's going to be this major event. I mean, trust me, you don't get 1,000 people there. You're going to get 100. If you get 100, it'll be great. And we did it at the airport when the county manager. We've done them at the Speedway, too. I mean, you just find a place, not so much that it's central, but it's easy to get to as far as the
highway.
The highway goes.
We've had a very successful event.
LPGA is another one that's easy to get to. You know, it's.
And then we have the center in Deltona as well.
Yeah.
And we've had them at high school cafeterias, and they've been very successful in Sarasota County. I mean, we had 300 to 400 people come, and and that was kind of in the long way because Northport is quite a distance from Sarasota. Still had a great turnout, so that'll be an option, whatever works out for you.
It's great.
So I have a quick question on September. So September we went over community forum. What does that usually entail?
Bill's going to – that's
great segue. Now we can move into our community advisory committee.
Can I ask one quick question? The dates that we just settled on, would you guys like me to send out in chat?
Yes.
Oh, please.
And then I can cancel them as I see.
Please.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Dr. Vogel, you've got the microphone.
Thank you. There are several opportunities for community involvement which we'd like to talk about, and if we could finalize those right now. The first, which John referenced, would be a community survey, and that would be posted online. And we would have people give input on what they think the priorities for the new superintendent should be, and it would also be open-ended. And we would begin posting that, and then if we work with your IT department for the format. We would provide the board a draft of the survey based on the conversation we've had today. And if the board would like to do that, we would post that during the period which is talked about on the calendar.
Dr. Vogel, can you just clarify, when you say open-ended, just like one question,
we would cover areas which you talked about today that were important. We would cover the instructional area, the community involvement priorities, the business and operations side, and performance accountability. And we would have different statements under each of those that the board would make a final approval on, and then at the end there would be an opportunity for people to list open-ended comments or questions that they might have.
Like, what do you think the board needs to know?
No.
Or is there anything
right.
else you want the board to hear so that they could type in something if
right.
it didn't
if they wanted to do that.
Land in the survey questions?
So if you would want a community survey, we would work with your IT department to go ahead and produce a draft for the board to look at and mark up, and then go forward from there.
Board members, how do you feel about about
that's
that? I'm thinking that I let me hope I'm speaking for the board here that we invite community input. We want to know their thoughts. We also want to make it as easy for them to do that. At the same time, being able to provide the input that they wish to provide. I mean, I was thinking more like, what are the qualities you want to see in our next school superintendent? I mean, I'm not sure if we want to get into the strategic plan with the community or anything
like
that.
This would be, you know, statements of what the board feels, or people could give input on what they feel is important.
Right. And then because, like with any survey, then after you get the result, you know, then you got to quantify it or present it to the board
right.
in some way that we can understand it. You know what I mean? I mean, if everyone is just, if there's so many categories and so many topics and so many ways, how does someone get that data and then be able to present it to the board so that we can gain some value from that input?
Well, then if the board does not want to do that, that would be the board decision on it. You know, that's been an opportunity to give everybody a chance online. It's an online survey. It would be hosted by the district, and it would be in the portal that you would have. So you'd look at all the schedules, and if people wanted to give input, they would go on and they would give input in that direction. If the board doesn't feel that's important, that's not a problem.
I can give you some example questions because I have some samples here. And basically, you ask the people on the following scale to rate superintendent leadership qualities. Okay, so they go from 1, not important, like doesn't concern me, to 5, essentially and critically important.
Okay.
So for example, under personal leadership qualities, holds themselves and others accountable. Likely people are going to say that's a 5, right?
Right.
Thinks with innovation, creativity, and courage. I heard from you guys that's important, but you might be surprised. Your community members might think that's not as important. They might rate it a little
right.
bit lower. And then we actually bring the results to the board so that before you have your interviews and stuff, you know exactly how the community feels, what are the most important issues. And you might be surprised at some of the things the community says either is important or isn't important.
Okay, well, I'll just stop you right there. That sounds great that they have a rating thing
correct.
For each question. Right. I thought it was just say how you feel, you have 300 people.
And then the
open-ended
questions, for example, what do you consider two or three strengths of the school district? So you can get information from the community telling you what the strengths might be. What do you think are the most important challenges in your school district? And then do you have any other comments?
Okay.
I think that fits with what you're looking
for. Yeah, so that it can be quantified at the end of it.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Columbia.
Right. I like the quantified questions, and one thing I know we can do with SurveyMonkey, and I'll look over at Mike and Kelly, is where they are able to pull how many words were reoccurring. In other words, did people say the word trust 640 times? And so having that information, because when we did the uniform survey, of course, there were comments, and I mean, you could only go through and read so many before you got the gist of it. We're having those key words pulled out, which I know SurveyMonkey is able to do. That seems to be more, and honestly, I think maybe one last statement is good. I don't know that I'm in favor of too many open-ended questions for that same reason. You know, we have to then decide how many characters are we going to allow. You know, are folks going to be able to write a book or not? So, I'd like to stick to things that we can measure versus
no books.
Things that we can't measure.
And what we'll do is we'll provide a draft, and that's why we'll provide it to the board. We can probably do that in a week, and then the board members can look through that and see how they want to do it. Another thing that we've done, and you may want to look at that, is we've done that by zip code. So the results have...
We know what district.
What district, because you have several different communities. We can work with the IT department. They can clarify that by zip code, too, so you can...
What do y'all think about that zip code? Yeah, it sounds good.
So that would be we'll work on a community survey for board approval and move forward with that.
Thank you.
Okay, the second is internal district-related focus groups, and that's where we would come into the district. You'd identify particular internally oriented focus groups. Like you might want us to meet with the teachers association group, the administrative association group, the PTA, and we would talk to them about strengths of the district, challenges facing the new superintendent, and any characteristics or other input that they would like to give us. And then we would summarize that, and then we would provide that information to the board. And John and I could go ahead and do that if you want to have someone from your department come with us, that's fine, or we will do that.
Okay, so let me ask you this question, and then I'll get to you. How many of these groups, because you all have to meet with them, so, I mean, are you looking at like five or six?
We are open for the groups that the board would identify.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Typically, we've done large like at the high school meetings, and
I'll talk about the next one.
Okay.
The next is community forums.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, and there's internal groups, and then there's community forums that are open to the entire community. So you would identify. We might go to Pearson. We might go to New Smyrna. We might go to Daytona, and we meet. We could meet at a school, and then we would go ahead and advertise those through your community relations department. Board members normally come if they would like to. Individual board members come, or sometimes they choose not to come. It'd be up to that. And then we hold a forum, and we basically ask, strengths, challenges facing new superintendent, what characteristics we should look at, and then we provide that information too. That's another option that we have to provide community input.
So you're thinking you would do maybe like one in each of our districts?
We would try to accommodate that anything that the board would like to do on that. So there's the internal groups to make sure we get input from the internal groups in the district. We think that, if the board feels that's a priority, which I'm hearing it is, and then we also then get external input by going out into the community. And John and I would go out, we'd be happy to do that.
And we do recognize that anyone who's an employee can participate in any of the external ones as well. We're not saying just because you're an employee you have to come to the employee meeting.
Right.
They are citizens as well.
And the internal, we might want to meet with just the PTA board, the administrative association leadership board, or however the teacher association wants to do it. It could be their leadership board. However, you would like us to work.
We've seen all sorts of structures.
Okay. Well, let's tackle them one at a time. What do you feel about the community one? One in each district? Yes? No?
Yes?
Yes?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Yes,
with
but.
The exception of this.
Go ahead.
I go from Seville to DeBary.
Yeah.
The land.
I have the largest, like, geographical location.
You just have to pick a spot, you know. They'd have to pick a spot. That's.
There aren't any perfect geographical locations, are they? Go ahead.
And I think we, the three of us, along the East Coast, we can maybe do two. You know, I'm willing to go up to Port Orange and then maybe have one further north because we do share that Port Orange border, and it's not that far. But I also have a question. I don't know how many other districts do this, but the people who work here in the administration, is it appropriate for them to have a meeting as well?
Sure it is. It
because
certainly is.
They're the ones that are going to have to meet and work every day with this superintendent.
That's why we really like the idea of internal groups. So they could, that could be, you know, district people are welcome to come to that. Or like Andrea said, they can go to any other one. But if they want to meet, certainly we'd be happy to do that too.
You could, for example, and I don't know how your union, for example, structures their countywide meetings when they have all their reps come, but they could invite up. They could invite us to one of those, and on that same day, what if let's say that starts at 4, and I don't know, I'm just guessing, earlier that day we could come to this building, I don't know, during the lunch hour or something, and people could come in and meet with us and give some input. I will say when the district office wants to provide input, how do I say this? It's not that board members are not welcome, because they're welcome to everything, but we get more honest input sometimes
we're
if board members aren't in that meeting.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
That's fine.
So,
Ms. Haynes, Heather.
So, could you and I work together in the meeting, say we hold in Deltona, be for maybe DeBary and Lake Helen, that they could come that way, or Orange City, if I hold the other one on the north, you know, in DeLand or on the north end? I'm just saying to...
No. No, absolutely. We certainly can. And I think the way I envision it, Jamie, in my head is, you know, we've got our very active chambers on our side.
Yes.
I'm almost thinking maybe City Hall, they've opened it to me for anything that I want. So I'm thinking we may be able to centrally bring, you know, bring those folks there.
If they're going to work together and do two, if we could work together and do two, then.
I think the hard part is identifying who these groups are as far as the internal part. So we have our teachers union. We have the other union, which is our
ASME.
Right. So I don't know. I think their needs are different.
You've got your PTAs, you've got your SACs, you know, some
right.
of those. And we would try to stack them in the same day so that we could kind of meet back to back.
And I heard you had administrative association, so if you want, we want that. So that would be teachers, teachers union, ASME, PTA. What about the foundation?
Futures
Foundation.
Mm-hmm. That's a possibility. You had a SAC meeting. You have administrative association. We don't have to decide this right now, but when we come back on the 30th. We're going to have to finalize. That's why we wanted to open this up for you all to be thinking about. And when we come back, we'll also need to know you'd like us to have community forums, because it sounds like you want to have that.
So think about it. We don't need that decision today.
And add chambers to that, because I think all of the chambers of commerce
can
come together and do that. And so,
yeah.
And that would be one of the external. I have a question for you.
Yes.
So when we look at these very internal organizations, most of them do have a board. But I believe what happens often, there are other people who probably really want to have something to say. So if we open it up to the administrative, they may have a board of 5. Would other administrators be allowed to attend?
That would be up to the
principals.
That'd be
administrators.
Fine. Sure.
Right. But I'm just saying not just the boards. View has a board, but would it be open up just to members of View?
Normally it is.
Sure.
I mean, unless you guys tell us not
to. Totally open, right.
Okay, but we're also leaving out there are people that don't belong.
Correct.
Right.
And I don't think we should exclude them.
That's why typically it would be Now, some districts do have a hard line on that, and they say, well, this is who represents that group, and that's who you should meet with. But other districts are more flexible on that. You guys are the ones who tell us.
I want everyone to be able, if someone wants to have a voice, I want them to be heard.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of those community ones, so that anyone that couldn't make it to because of the time, because of the schedule, they're invited to come, and there'll be at least, sounds like, one, two, three of them at the least. So
and as we work with your public relations to announce your community forums, it's really you're having maybe four community forums located at these different locations.
Yeah.
Come one, come all.
So no one could say, I didn't have a chance to participate.
Right. Yes. Just because you live in DeLand doesn't mean you couldn't
Drive to the east side, yes. Mr. Clump, let's
would you all support having an even more tighter group of, let's say, three folks that each of us select to be a focus group? Because, you know, a lot of these other, you know, these are bigger groups where, you know, the needs of our community and my community may be different than that of yours, which will get lost in a big meeting where, you know, Port Orange has certain needs, DeBary has certain needs, Deltona has different needs. Maybe one group that's just that. I don't know. I mean, is that something?
I think it would get a little bit political if we started doing that, personal opinion. Because are you going to bring us to the Citizens Advisory Committee?
That's next.
Okay, so that may be, Ruben, what could satisfy that.
What we would do is, I'm assuming Kelly would be our contact. So we would work with her. She would do it as part of the press release. When this is all, we'll give you a summary of all the community involvement pieces to this. And then all the forums we would try to set up through Kelly. And it's going to be a big job with locations and so forth. And then board members would be invited to come. They would not be necessarily required to come. We would try to work around that. The next piece, and some of the school districts like to do this and some don't, would be for the board to impanel a superintendent search citizens advisory committee. And we make it very clear. We have very strict guidelines for the role of this committee, which we would provide to the board in advance so you would see what the role of this committee would be. It's not to select the superintendents, to provide input to the board. And normally the Citizens Advisory Committee would meet and they would review the applications after they would come in. And they would screen the applications based on the qualifications and the priorities of the board. And then we would, depending on the number of applicants, we would screen the applicants. They would help us screen the applicants down to a certain number. It might be 10, or depending on how many applicants we have or so. Then, with the understanding is that the board could add any other applicants to the mix that they would like to, because the board has a decision if they would like to add someone else on that. And now, normally the way this committee is selected is, as Mr. Colon said, each board member could select two or three members or however they would like. And there's also those, sometimes boards want to have certain constituent groups on that committee. For example, they might want to have someone from the Chamber of Commerce on it.
Yeah.
They might want to do that. They might want to have someone from the PTA on it, might want to have someone from the Teachers Association on it. But the board would decide. Normally, they're a selected by individual and also selected by an organization.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
If that's something a board would like.
Yeah. I see in the heads nod. So, and I would think my experience with these that I would 15 would be plenty. So that's three each, a group of 15 for the Citizens Advisory Committee.
Okay. We're fine with working with that group, with 15. Or we can go up to, we've worked with groups of 25. We don't have any.
I would not recommend 25. You want to get something accomplished, and 15 can do what 25 can do, and probably a good group of seven can do what 15 could do. But I think three each would give us plenty of opportunity to make sure within 15 people that we could have a great representation. And each of you can make sure people from your areas that you want would be on that committee.
Can we yes. consider making it 18 so that the district can add three folks as well?
Why?
Well, the reason I say that is so we each are looking for our constituencies and our students. And so the district is also a stakeholder as well. And so
we
go ahead, Ted. You're shaking your head.
We
well, the district wouldn't get involved. I think that what you might be thinking, though, you all collectively could pick, like, Chamber of Commerce person and those kind of things. But
so
the district as an organization
so
cannot be involved in the
so
process.
So would we be limited in who we can pick? For example, let's say I wanted one of my principals to be.
Oh, I think you could pick.
Well, you just have to be real careful when you go down that road because you're talking about somebody picking their future boss.
Gotcha.
And they're going to have supervisory powers and et cetera. And since I have the mic just real quick, I want to remind everybody that this organization that you create or this group will be subject to the sunset clause.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. So when you're thinking about your three, you might want to mention to them that that is going to be you know, imposed upon them.
Right.
So that they're all comfortable
and
with
in
that.
In my experience, and you helped me with what you're planning, is that they met one time.
We would probably have two or three meetings.
And
the first one is the sunshine.
Right.
just to give them, give them their little orientation.
I usually give an orientation.
Right.
Yeah.
Sunshine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And then they have the resumes.
Correct.
Right.
And they all read them and rate them and that. And will you be with them during that time? Okay.
And then
great.
They may need a third meeting or may not, depending on how they do that.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
That's good.
I don't think they will. I mean, it's important for us to be able to tell them that. You know, what's my obligation if I.
Right.
If I agree to serve on this committee. Okay.
Right.
So we'll bring back a proposal for that.
Okay.
And this is
Ms. Wright. I'm sorry. I didn't see you.
That's okay, Mr. Chair. I actually like 25, and let me tell you my rationale.
Oh. No, hear me out.
How about 55?
No. Let me tell you. No. And there's a reason, because when we look at curriculum and we look at finance and we look at community, we have five areas on our strategic plan that we say are important. And from each of those groups, I could find someone that's not part of the district that actually have the skill set. I'm always big in skill set of saying, this is what we need. I think each of us can. Now, I'm fine with the three, because 15. The only reason I didn't like 20, because that's an odd number. I think we need to have an uneven number. 15
is an odd number.
No. 20, because Jamie was saying four when we wrote the hand. And the only reason I said 5 or 15, again, I think you need, when you look at somebody from the chamber, if we're talking about finance, you need to get somebody who really understands finance, or even maybe have a knowledge of accounting. When we talk about curriculum, so we got former retired teachers, we got former retired administrators who could really speak to curriculum. Some of the areas that we really don't have the expertise. So, I mean, I'm not saying either way. I'm just saying we just got to be smart. And
about who we,
And so that's why I said, we were looking at the strategic plan. That was all my reason. But, I mean,
gotcha. Gotcha. And we could look at that. That could help guide us about the people that we put on that committee at the end.
And I think that makes sense, actually. Sorry, Carl. I think it makes sense only because you have the five areas. And now that you said it that way, you know, who may be there as a parent, you know, with a certain skill set may not be. And so if you're really tied to our strategic plan.
I'm not going to be in that committee. But I'm just thinking there are five of us. There are five areas. We can make that work.
Yes.
Just to make sure we each appoint somebody to address each of those areas on the committee.
But you can see why we built the timeline with extra workshops, because there are a lot of decisions to be made along the way, and we don't want to put them all in front of you at once because we need to build on some of them. But these are the things we want you to start thinking about, because we'll come back with some plans, but we're going to have some direction at some point. We're going to need to move forward based on our timeline. Yeah.
So when would this committee need to be formed? I guess that's after after October, I guess.
It's in your timeline.
It's in your timeline.
Yeah. Well, at the bottom of the first page, it's October 1 through the 11th, and I kind of suspicion that we'll have to meet twice.
Yeah.
First, to kind of get their stack of resumes and the applications, to receive their directions regarding sunshine, to review their what they're there to do, what they're not there to do.
Yeah.
And then they'll come back at another meeting to kind of proceed forward. So really to identify them and kind of let them know in a formal way, you've been recommended to be a part of this advisory screening committee of the resumes, and these are the dates. And if they cannot make both meeting dates or three meeting dates, they really should just, you know, reject the offer.
Yeah.
Because if you miss a date, you're out.
Sure.
So we'll need a couple of weeks before the resumes close.
To get it from us.
To notify them and move forward.
Can we set those as date certain so that we can start reaching out to these folks and get it?
They're in your calendar already, October 1 to 11. So if they already know they're traveling.
Some window in there. And I will look to bring back specific dates the next time we talk about our calendar after we've adjusted it some. And I will say just briefly, not to kind of keep kicking this around, but if you decide on five persons per board member, you probably need to have seven or eight, because this board member may pick your first choice, so you may need extras. The other way around that is some boards have said, we're going to identify five organizations that will be there. The chamber president, we're going to identify the PTA president, and we're going to identify this person, that person, this person. Those five organizations will appoint one person to be part of the screening committee. Then we will pick three additional people or two additional.
Two additional.
It just sometimes that helps avoid everybody picks the chamber president, everybody picks a representative from the NAACP, or everybody picks a representative from the union. You just say, look, as a board, we have to have these five organizations here because of what they, United Way, whatever it is. Just to be thinking.
That makes perfect sense.
To be thinking.
Yeah,
it's great.
And we'll pull this together, understanding that we're going to take what we've heard today and try to do our best job, but we're subject to the way the board would like to change it. The final thing we talked about a little bit was the community reception, and that would be on that night. And the way that normally we do the community reception, there's a couple of formats. If there are three or four people that would come, each person would introduce themselves, and if it's normally it's held in a large area, like a school cafeteria, and then each person would go to a separate area of the cafeteria, and citizens, four corners, and they citizens come by and they can meet, shake their hand, and talk with them, the people, individually. So it's all informal. And then what happens is before anybody leaves, they fill out an input form. On the strengths and the challenges and the questions they might have about the person, strengths and questions normally. And then that night, we go ahead and compile all that information, and then the board members have it the next day on that Friday. So the board members hear from everybody at these receptions, and we've had 300 to 400 people at most every one we've had.
Wow.
So I think I heard a consensus we want to do that. The staff people, which we would probably need to be in close contact with, would be Kelly, and then your IT director for the survey.
Right there.
Okay, good. Then after the meeting, we can talk with them. And then probably your HR person, Paige Penter. But while we're here, can we bring up one thing that's important is, where do you want the application sent? And I think that, John, if we're moving forward, we do it in two different ways, several different ways. One is that some districts want the application sent directly to the HR department. Some that sometimes causes some challenges depending on the system that they have in place, because normally there's not a way to apply for a superintendent in the HR system. You can apply for an administrator, you can apply for a teacher, but there's normally not a place where you apply for a superintendent. The other is that they go to FSBA and John Reichert. And John, why don't you talk about that, how that would work if it goes to you? Because this
isn't that what we did with the interim?
Yes, that is what we did with the interim. I will say there are strengths and weaknesses for both.
Let's keep it.
Let's just do that.
Okay.
That's way we know it's safe and secure.
But HR is still involved in this way. And just to reiterate why, it's because it works well this way, because then the person does not, they submit a resume and a cover letter, and they answer some questions. But before anybody's hired, they have to go through the HR process where they fill out the application, drug testing, fingerprinting, and they also then, because only your HR department can access the DOE database
after a job is offered
to make sure there's no error on that.
Got it.
So we get phone calls just like before we...
Yes.
Right. And then we would coordinate with someone in your HR department too. John, anything you want to say about that?
Well, typically what boards would request from applicants would be, of course, a cover letter, their resume, three references, and unofficial transcripts. So sometimes it's very hard to get official transcripts. The month of this ad, there's some colleges that would take longer than a month to send official. So we would say we want the unofficial, and then if you select the person, they'll have to get official transcripts to support their doctorate degree or whatever degree they're claiming. But the ad would say that, you know, if you're an interested applicant, you send directly to me the cover letter, resume, three references, and unofficial transcripts, if that's what you would like included.
Sure.
In your packet. The only other issue that we'll discuss just to be thinking about is once the advertisement opens, I would suggest that I'll be able to send to you each individually every Friday those completed applications who were submitted the first week. The second week, every Friday, so you'll have a little in advance of, you can kind of start making your stacks and not get all 35 or 40 or 45 on one day. It could be a process, but we can talk about how you want to receive completed applications.
Sounds good.
As you can see, there's a lot of logistics in pulling this
really
together, a lot of pieces on it. Community input, I think we have a good input. Final is we need to talk about is the salary range.
Thank you.
Before I start on that, Bill, before you start on that, did we talk about the advertising, the level of advertising?
Yes, we can talk about that too. We can go back to that, and the only thing I've got to talk about is the salary and then also the job description,
okay,
which I have, which is current job description.
Do you have one?
Yes, I have.
Okay. John, you want to go back to that? Mr. Persis, go ahead.
The venues in which we would advertise, there are multiple venues in which you could do this. There's American Association of School Administrators, School Personnel Administrators, the Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents. There's a list. The ones from our experiences that really have a tendency to provide the best results and investment for return on your investment, we definitely would recommend that you go with the Education Week, the top school jobs. That ad, the last we checked, which with our last posting, was $785. We would also recommend that you go with the FASA, the Florida Association of School Administrators. Their ad is $300. And all of these ad postings are pretty much minimum of 30 days, which would fit right for us. Most of them go six. Some go 60 days, so it'd be plenty of time to post. But EdWeek, the Florida Association, and then you would probably want to consider discussions about advertising in the National Alliance of Black School Educators, and also the Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents. If we've heard a few comments about diversity in our discussion, so those two sites would be appropriate. if you look at those four sites, you're looking at probably around $1,500 to advertise for a minimum of 30 days in each of those four sites. Additionally, there are some associations that Ms. Messina has, other state associations that she is able to advertise at no cost. So, you know, like the NAS, the National Association of Superintendent Searches. So there's some connections there as well.
Okay. So, board members, is there any objection to advertising in all four sites for $1,500?
I do not see any objection.
So that's okay. Your correct direction.
We'll pick those four, and then our free any free sites that are appropriate.
And all free sites.
All free sites, but, yes, sir.
So, Mr. Chair, so you know, yes to those four, but what national ones would get us the exposure, the best exposure? And I'll remind everyone, you know, one of the things I said when we went with FSBA is that they were about $10,000 less than everyone else, which gave us a little bit of wiggle room to be able to ensure that our position gets in front of the entire country, arguably. And so, you know, those four are good for the start.
Well, we could add the American Association of School Administrators. Again, at last posting for 30-plus days, that was right at $700.
Education Week was the big national one, and that was already included in the four that we gave you.
Right.
And that's typically Education Week. I don't know. Do you read Education Week? Are you familiar with the?
Not familiar with
okay.
It.
Some people do, some people don't, but that is like the one area.
That's
if you're an administrator and if you're looking for a job, it's Education Week, and that was already one of the four we gave you.
Okay, right. We've had very good success with attracting national candidates in all our searches through the model we use. We also contact all of the state associations, administrative associations.
Okay.
We do that through our organization. And then Andrea does it through the School Board Association. So we're doing pretty well with that. One thing that we haven't really talked about is when I looked at your job, advertising, we're good, pretty good with advertising. We'll bring you
any other suggestions other than those four?
The American Association of School Administrators is another one. But like he said, that's another $700. That's one of the most expensive $700, which I'm not opposed to it at all. It's just if we're looking to try to get you more exposure for less money, that's the one that we don't recommend in our first round of recommendations.
I'd have no issue supporting putting it there if it's going to expand our search nationally.
I don't
more.
See. I just don't think it doesn't reach a different audience. Anyone that's looking to be a superintendent has Education Week weekly. It's weekly. And it comes out, and there are four pages at least of advertisements, districts looking for superintendents. I mean, if you're anybody, I'm not saying that.
You could
spend $700, but I don't think it gets you any more. It doesn't reach a different audience than Education Week.
What are your thoughts, Andrew? I mean, you guys deal with this.
I would agree with what Carl said. I mean, the people who are wanting to be superintendents, they'll scan everything, but minimally they're going to scan Ed Week.
Okay.
Thank you. The final area I think we wanted to talk through today and not finalize it is the salary, and I have one more on qualifications too. We looked at your job description for the superintendent, and it's pretty much, and we would put this in the advertisement. We work on that. Talks about a master's degree in educational administration. Essentially, I would summarize this briefly because you may not have it. Certificate in ed leadership or administration, minimum of 10 years, successful experience in education, at least 7 in administration. And then there's some other areas that are preferred, such as successful experience as school principal and superintendents preferred, doctorate degrees preferred. But one thing, it does not provide an opportunity for a non-traditional candidate to be qualified to apply. And I just wanted to...
So would you like us to bring back some language to add
clarify,
to it?
Because your current job description does not provide that. And I wanted to up front make sure you were aware of that. It seems like everyone knew that, but I just wanted to assume that. So
I'm good with that.
Okay, great.
So you do want language? You want us to?
I am.
Well, let's ask Graham. Okay. Get
I want language for non-traditional.
You do?
I do.
Because most of the committee candidates that come through Broad, the Broad experience are non-traditional, correct?
Yeah, many of them are not traditional. That is correct.
So, yeah, that's right. Okay.
All right, so we will bring back some proposed language to add to your job description, and then that would be one of those items we would discuss in a workshop, but later you'd have it on one of your board agendas at some point to vote on.
What I'll try to do is I'll draft what up for you, what you have in here with some additional language, and the board would, that's something that the board would need to finalize so we can get that advertised. The final is salary.
Money's always last.
Yeah.
Salary. Andrea has provided a summary of superintendent salaries, and of course these change regularly, but this is the most up-to-date list. When you look at where you are right now, your current superintendent is at 175, and if you look at the other districts that are in close population, they range up to 235 in Seminole. Now, Mr. Griffin has been there for a few years, so a thought might be for us to say go from the 175 where you are right now to 200.
I would like to point out the five districts that are smaller than you in student population, most immediately smaller than you. If you look up those five, each one of those five already is paying their superintendent more. And for some districts, that's 20,000 students difference, and they're still paying more. So we just wanted to kind of bring that to your attention, because people who apply for this are going to have certain expectations, and in order to attract the kind of candidate that we think you want, you're going to have to be a competitive district.
And that was the first thing I looked at. And so when you look at that average salary for those five above us, that's about 202.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking going up. I mean, we're a big district, and I think that limiting ourselves may, you know, when you think of a number two who is in a district that's a nice sized district, you know, they may be making that money right now. Mm-hmm. And so they're not going to leave being the deputy to come and be a superintendent in a challenging district. I'll say we're challenging, to take a, you know, $20,000 job cut. And so I see what the average is here. I see what the folks who are under us. I mean, it's all going to be based on experience. And, I mean, is that not how it works? So if you have somebody who's got no experience, they're closer to the 175 mark.
Right.
If you have somebody who has quite the portfolio and has turned a district around and is interested, then at least we give ourselves that space.
I hear you, but unfortunately, in this environment, I wouldn't come here for 175. And not our district. I'm just looking at our comparative salaries from all the other districts. I think if we're going to have a window, our window probably needs to start at 190.
I agree.
I don't think we can start at 180, 175.
Okay.
Just based on the salaries we see.
And at 175, you're going to get 175.
So 190 output. To what?
To the average?
To 215, maybe?
I'm good with that.
What do you think, Mr. Chair?
Here's what I think. I think that people are going to want to come here, and I think that if they want to be a superintendent, they will trust their confidence and be able to do a great job and impress upon this board that maybe I'll get in, but they'll give me a big raise after I do such a great job, which we can. We can do whatever we want, but I just don't want to overpay somebody in this first year's. We don't pay our teachers near enough, and we don't pay our regular staff near enough. And just to put somebody way up high, you know, if I really thought it was going to be that much of a difference in the type of person that would be applying, I would say yes. But I think we can get some really, really strong candidates with the range. Not saying we have to start them at 175, but if the person knows coming in maybe based on his or her experience, this board may want to start him at $200,000. But I think we should have the range of 175 to, what did you say, 200?
210.
To 210.
I'm hearing 210.
I mean, that's a pretty big range.
That's just a big range.
So. I just was going to start it a little higher than 175.
I was going to say 185 to 210.
185, 210?
Yeah, it goes back to sometimes the people you're trying to attract, you got to give them a salary that's attractable. 175, based on the numbers we have in front of us, is not attractable.
No.
I think some people do see the first number in the scale and say, oh, they're only paying 175, and then they're out. If that's what you're saying.
That's not true, though, that we're only paying 175. If we say 175 to 210.
Yeah, but now I got to negotiate. And if I know I'm not going to start at 175, I'm not going to apply. I'm just saying, the non-traditional, I'll put this. If you're looking for if we're going to really look at non-traditional, and if I go look at some of the non-traditional people that have been hired superintendents, they're not going to. They just don't play ball like that. I'm not going to start at 175. It's not worth my time. I'm not going to apply.
I agree.
I don't want to waste nobody's time.
Yes, Ms. Cuthbert.
We hired Mr. Russell at 175, and that was 4 years ago. Salaries have changed. And you said there are other counties that are going to be hiring a superintendent very shortly. And so the better candidates may say, well, I'll just wait till such and such county opens up, and I'll bypass Volusia County. I think we need to, and this is what I said in May, we've had a bargain for a long time. And when you compare the superintendent's pay to the county manager's pay, who has fewer employees than we do, city managers of our communities, I mean, our superintendent made a heck of a lot less. And I remember the city of Edgewater just recently hired a city manager at higher than this. And so, and then you have to add benefits on all to this. Are we going to hire a man or woman of quality, or are we not? I would like some stability in this county. I would like a person of quality who is going to own our county. One who I'd like to have 3, 4, maybe 5 years, if that person is working well with our county. But this kind of turnover does a lot of damage to our county. So what are we going to do? Everyone is fighting for higher salaries, and I'm a firm believer in raising our salaries for our personnel. We do not pay enough, and we will never, ever pay enough. But are we going to find a leader to guide everyone? Either we bite the bullet or we don't. So I don't even think starting at 190 is enough. And I totally agree with Mrs. Wright. If you're going to ask for quality people, we're going to have to give a quality salary, one that reflects what other professionals are earning in this county. I mean, does anyone know what the county manager right now is earning?
I do not.
Mr. Doran, do you happen to know what the county manager
Last I remember seeing in the paper was somewhere around $296,000.
296?
Yeah,
Deltona City manager makes about $190,000.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that, but that's my recollection. This person you probably
do you see
you were there.
It was all over the place. What Mr. Dineen made last.
I think
last
the city manager of Daytona. Beach
that just doesn't include him.
Yeah.
250 or something like that.
But what happens is, and you know, is once you get them in, then comes the first year, and you give them a raise, and then that percentage raise when you start out at 200, a 3% raise is $6,000. Now they're at 2.6, and then that proportion of that top administrator is there's such a gap between that person and everyone else. And
And I've been through all these top administrators getting all these huge salaries, and I've seen some that didn't. And I don't know. I think that we would attract a great group of candidates, whether it's 185 or 195 or 200. I don't think you're going to see a world of difference between candidates that are $10,000 apart, particularly when, and again, we're not saying the salary will be 175 or 190. We're saying this is the range, depending on your qualifications and how much the board wants you, this board could pay at the top of that range.
Is there anyone opposed to starting the bottom number at 185? Anyone strongly opposed to 185 being the low number?
I think it's too low.
I hear one objection. Anybody else oppose? All right, so then let's look at the top number. Should we go beyond? I'm sorry, Mr. Dorn?
Well, I just want to make sure I don't get shot later.
Yeah. That's good.
Because I just Googled it. Okay. So I just want the real facts out there before somebody says I was doing something evil. George Rechtenwald was just hired at 215. Jim Dineen was making 249. These are their base pay.
Right.
As I recall, the total package was 296. It was 249 for Jim Dineen, and then 215 for George Rechtenwald.
And this is George's first year.
And then Jim Chisholm is 227, 584.
But if we, so let's look at this. Bang, so bang. Let's move away from that. When Dr. Smith left here, Dr. Smith was at 240?
240-something.
Exactly. And we just end up getting that down to about $50,000. Now, most people don't move backwards in their salary ranges.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look, but I mean, even Bill Hall made more, what is that, 15 years ago?
Exactly.
Than Tom Mason made.
Exactly. I mean, again, I think it was all about the nature and the culture, because Tom did not come in with any experience. And at that time, we took our interim, right, and without even going through a true vetting process, and made him the superintendent. Versus if we go with someone who has experience, you're not getting an experienced superintendent, right, for what we're offering. And I just want us to be realistic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're right.
One difference, too, is the master's versus doctorate degree.
That's true.
So, you know, Mr. Russell didn't have a doctorate degree. But if you want to attract good candidates, I mean, 98% of them are going to have doctorate degrees. And
so, but you're saying Bill Hall, though, did not. He made more than Tom did.
Because he'd been here and we paid better.
So can we go 185 to 225?
Okay. I'm fine with that.
Good. Okay.
Anybody opposed to that?
So 185 to 225.
225. Right.
Based upon experience and
residential.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That sounds good.
And education. Mm-hmm.
That's really helpful. The only other thing I didn't see is, and we didn't talk about, some districts like to put Florida experience as preferred. It really doesn't. I'm not sure that helps or hurts, because I'm hearing the board wants to do a national search. They want to get information out. So I think if you leave it open, then if someone has Florida experience, that's good.
Does anybody want Florida experience?
Preferred. It wouldn't be required, but it would be.
I don't see it. So
okay, good.
Some districts have very strong feelings about that.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so we have a lot to bring back to you based on
you really do. This has been very thorough, though. I don't know about you all. I'm very impressed by this, everything you all
have. Any final questions you have for us before we give you the rest of your day?
No, you have given us a lot. It's been well done. I think we hired the right group to guide us through our search, that's for sure.
If we've got anything, give us a call.
Thank
you so much.
All right, we're in recess here.
Anything else?
Workshop, and we're going to change the order around a little bit since we went a little long on our first item of business. And right now we're going to hear the presentation. This would be item 3.04, the replacement school, Deltona Middle School. And Ms. Morrissey, will you be leading this discussion?
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. And, well, I guess it's exactly noon, and
it
I should start. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, and Mr. Egnor, appreciate you taking this item forward because we have our project team with us, the representatives associated with CT SHU. Those are the architects. I have Renee Alvarez. You may recall you've met Renee before.
Yes.
And then I also have with me Core Construction, our construction manager, and Mr. David Lewis, and I believe that you have met David before as well. So this item should not take too long. This is an update, and the reason why I wanted to come forward to you is because we are having to make some changes to the site plan. And so I wanted to be able to show the board the site plan and have the board understand the situation that is that we, as a project team, believe makes a revised site plan warranted. We came forward in January where we presented this site plan to you. And as we've been moving forward with the design documents, we have encountered what we consider to be undesirable soil conditions. And those undesirable soil conditions are in the north part of our site, which is this area. So at this point, I'm going to turn the site plan conversation over to Renee Alvarez. He'll remind you what we approved and where we're taking our new school.
Okay, let's get to it.
Thank you. So the previous site plan layout showed us basically with an L-shaped building wrapping around some of the existing buildings that were to remain, and we're basically having a large portion of the building sitting sort of at the rear of the campus. And that area in particular is what we've found now to have poor soil conditions. So in an effort to minimize the impact in terms of cost, in terms of piles and so on to support a structure in that area, we have attempted to sort of consolidate the plan a little bit more and move it more sort of towards the north, which is to your left on the diagram, and avoid that area as much as we could, and still maintain the relationship of the existing buildings that we will be renovating to the new facility. And we think we've come up with a plan that that works quite well for the school and for the programs there. I would point out that that area, just one second, that one area, that there's an area there of a pond that also exists, so we're still waiting on final soil borings, which might lead to some of the structure still requiring piles. So we're still waiting on that, but this mostly removes the building from the area that we already understand to have poor soil conditions.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
And we wanted to show you updated schedule, which is based on that new site plan moving forward. And the schedule still keeps us at 23 months, still has us concluding construction at the end of that first semester of our 2021-22 school year. This schedule is based on the consensus that we received from the board that we're moving forward with bonding that will assist in getting this school moving forward and has us still going out for bids at the end of this calendar year.
And going out for bids at the end of this calendar year is why do we wait that long to go out for bids?
Well, we still have to finalize the construction documents.
Okay.
And at this point,
we can't go out for bid until we know what it is they're going to bid on.
Right. And the better your documents, the better your bids will be. And
gotcha.
So we've worked hard to keep the schedule because, quite frankly, this issue with the site plan and even not having final borings yet is a bit of a hiccup. in terms of the schedule, but we have sat down two or three weeks ago and revisited schedule, and this one that we're showing you, we believe we can still
That's great.
Make
That's
it work.
Good news.
Okay?
Yeah. Excellent.
And so I wanted to bring that forward because it is a change from what you all saw in January, and I wanted you to understand why we are making that change.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions before we dismiss them?
I just want to say, you had a question?
Excuse me, I'm sorry,
Mr. Chairman. Thank you so much. We appreciate your patience. And we've come a long way from the selection to now, and I'm very glad that we're moving forward. When you find that pond, how much more time will we need to find what the soil borings are?
So they are out there right now doing the borings. I believe they have five more to do, and it takes, believe it or not, a full day for one boring because of how deep we're going. And they had to bring in a special piece of equipment for these borings because it's a pond. It's an amphibious. It's an
platform. Yeah.
Amphibious platform. There you go. So this week, today's Monday, this week they'll complete borings. And so we should be getting our report next week. We have another project meeting on Monday, and our geotechnical consultant will be with us.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we thank you all for being here. And
thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're
welcome. Too.
All right. Our next item that will be presented to us will be item 3.02, the school grades presentation. And once again, if you would just introduce yourselves and your titles, thank you.
Good afternoon, Superintendent Egner, Mr. Persis, and school board members. I'm Rachel Hazel, Interim Chief Academic Officer, and I'm joined by Eric Holland, the Assistant Director for Digital Learning and Assessment. And we are here to present to you a presentation about our school grades. We all know that the school grades came out 2 weeks ago now, and we've been able to do an analysis of how our school stands. Interestingly enough, when we were at the state board meeting this last week, I heard a comment from a parent that stuck with me, that while we know the school grading systems are flawed, it also tells us what we need to talk about and where we need to be focused. So more importantly than presenting those grades, which we want to give you an overall picture of where we are, we also want to tie in our plans for next year and the changes that we've made so you can see how those plans and changes go along with where we stand as a district.
So as you probably read in the newspaper and in our memo, we are, again, a B district that overall hasn't changed from last year to this year. It's just actually the exact same number of points that we had last year. So I want to do just a quick review of this because even though I talked to principal groups and all sorts of community groups and teacher groups, they still sometimes get confused about what is included in the school grade, what's not included in the school grade, how does that whole overall calculation work. So I'm going to go across the top first. So English, Language Arts, Math, Science, and Social Studies. There is those four boxes that says achievement, 0% to 100%. So that those boxes right there is the percent of students scoring 3 or higher on those particular assessments. So English, Language Arts, that's your FSA, ELA. Math will be your algebra, your geo, and your FSA math. Science will be your 5th, 8th grade, and your bio. Social studies will be your civics and your U.S. history, EOC. So that's the overall percent of students scoring 3 or higher in that category. Going down that box on English, Language Arts, and math, it has learning gains, and then the learning gains are the lowest 25%. So the state has a very prescribed way of calculating the learning gains. For each achievement level, so achievement level 3, 4, and 5 is a little bit different than a student making a learning gain in your level 1 and level 2. But that would be the percent of students making gains based upon their formula. And then, of course, our graduation rate, that's the 4-year. That's a lagging indicator, so that's based upon the grad rate that came out in January. And then we have an acceleration category for high school and in middle school. The high school is based upon students who take and pass an AP, IB, dual enrollment, industry certs, and graduated. So let's say I took an AP or an IB test in ninth grade. That doesn't count for acceleration for a high school until I graduate with a standard diploma 4 years in the future. Middle school acceleration is a separate category. So that is the denominator is set based upon students who score level 3 or higher in math in seventh grade. So that's your denominator. And then your numerator would be any one of those students who take and pass the algebra or geometry assessment. And then there's some industry certs that play in the mix, but we won't dive into the weeds on that one. So here's a breakdown of our district grade in those cells. So you can kind of see that some of the categories had some increases and then some decrease. So it's kind of a mixed bag when you're looking at the district as a whole. For instance, the lowest students making gains in the lowest quartile in ELA went up to where the math, that same group went down to. The graduate rate went up 2%, where the high school acceleration dropped 3%. So overall, we were a B district, and when you average all of those together and collect all the points, we're the exact same spot where we were 365 days ago. So elementary school grades is a little bit easier than some of the other models because it is strictly test-based. There's not an acceleration category. There's not a grad rate. There's nothing. It's just what they did on the FSA assessment and on that science FCAT. So I wanted to give you a breakdown of the elementary schools by the letter grade that they earned for the last 3 years to kind of get a perspective of where we're going. Last year, as you recall, the elementary grades overall took a hit. There's really not another way to put that. Our elementary school grade dropped drastically last year in 2017, 2018. And we talked about at this probably maybe a year ago, talked about what we were going to do in elementary to kind of move our district forward in elementary school grades, and really talked about interventions in our schools, helping our teachers provide strong interventions, and focusing on the lowest quartile students making gains, ensuring that those students were making gains. So as you can see, for the elementary school grades making an A, we're still not to the point where we were in 16-17, but we increased two-letter grades, or two schools moving up. B, again, not where we were in 16-17, but much better than where we were in 2017-18. So our C's shrunk because of that movement upwards. Being, honest, we have D. We have one more school that is a D. So the three schools that were a D last year maintained their D, even though that there were substantial gains at Palm Terrace, and they made significant gains, but they were so far in the D that even with those significant gains, they were not able to pull out a C. And then we have one additional school that fell into that category, which was South Daytona, which was a D 2 years ago. So it kind of yo-yoed back into that. This is a quick little summary. 21 elementary schools are not rated A or B. This is up 13 schools from where we were last year. Still not to the point where we were 2 years ago. 28% of our schools increased a letter grade. We did have 11% of our elementary schools did decrease a letter grade, though. Middle school, same components that we had in elementary, except now they have their civics, which is just the same sort of thing, percent level 3 or above, and then that middle school acceleration component. So in this category, we had a school dip. So we went from last year in 2017-2018 of having 5 A's. Now we have 4. And then our B, we also decreased there. So where we had a lot of focus this past year, you know, most of the our board meetings and our conversations have really been focused on our elementary school grade. What are we doing to help our elementary school grade? You can see in elementary, we've seen some progress in our schools. We're not happy where they are. We still want to keep continue moving them forward. But middle school is starting to see some of those students who are exiting out of elementary school, and now middle schools are now have those students. So we're going to have to continue to work on not necessarily focusing on just one set of. You can't just focus on elementary, you can't just focus on middle, and you can't just focus on high school, because as a principal, if you focus on ELA, what happened to your math scores? The math scores dropped, and you focus on math. So thinking about more systemic support in all of our grade levels. So middle school, we had Galaxy did increase from A, C to B. That was our one middle school that increased the letter grade. 9 middle schools were rated A or B, but that's a decrease from 2 from the year before. High school has basically everything that the district grade has except for that middle school acceleration component. So there are 10 components in for your high school grade. And in this case, the only movements that we had was Spruce Creek High, who had went from an A in 17-18 and dipped down to a B this year. So again, pretty stagnant in that high school. There's some ups and downs, but overall letter grade was the same for all of those. I didn't include on this slide the Land High. So we've run through their numbers based upon they tested 94% of their students. You have to have 95 to be issued a school grade. And when we run through the calculations the way that the state defines it, so you have to do counting them as proficient, counting them as not proficient, and then counting them as percent tested, their school grade would be the same in all three of those categories, which is what we appeal to the state. So when we do that, their grade would be the same as they were the previous year, which is a C. So some of the positive in high school is we have significantly increased our graduation rate over time. So that has been a driving force for our district as a direction that our high schools have been led to was increase your graduation rate. That has continued to increase. Other components on that school grade, your ELA and your math, that is not in the same place as your graduation rates. Then I've already mentioned the rest.
Yeah. All right, so now I'm going to talk a little bit about our plans and how they tie into and mirror exactly what the data tells us that that's what is needed at this moment. For some of the changes are going to sound very familiar, and some of them are going to be new and changes that we've talked through since we have gotten the school grades. And I have a slide for each of these, so I'll just jump right into our bell schedule change. This is not new information, but we do have the additional 30 minutes at the elementary elementary level, and we have a later start time for high school and middle school, which research supports. In addition to that, we've reported to the board the scheduling guidelines committee that we had for elementary, where we took a long, hard look at the number of minutes that we have at the elementary day and made recommendations with teacher input, district specialist input, and administrator input on exactly how we use those minutes throughout the day, not just the additional 30, but all of our minutes. We really started from scratch and mapped out the day as far as how much time is needed for each subject. In addition, we've increased the planning time for elementary teachers during the school day, and that is their special area time where the contractual minimum was 35 minutes. It's now 45 minutes. instructional materials also is not new information, but certainly something that we are celebrating and we're excited to have. We have new textbooks for elementary ELA and new textbooks for elementary math. Many of them are here and being barcoded feverishly this week. We have additional training that's going to occur during pre-planning, but our teachers have already started that training. In fact, we began with Volusia Learns and started that initial rollout then, where we trained 712 of our teachers in ELA or math. So that's a little over half of our elementary school teachers have participated in one training or the other. Secondary math, as you saw, math was a concern there. We've created remediation courses in Canvas for secondary math and tweaked those. They were available last year, but on a more limited basis, and this year they're going to be more widely used. In addition, we're going to use Math Nation for eighth grade, and that is something that is a purchase that we made that is an addition. It's an online component and additional curriculum, as well as personal math trainer from our adopted materials. That is an addition as well. In secondary ELA, our course maps have been differentiated for the specific courses. They were much more general in nature, and the secondary ELA department has met and designed those specifically to differentiate, for example, if you have an honors version of a class or just the gen ed version of the class. In addition, there's new text sets for our Tier 2 intensive reading, and those were based on teacher input, the requests that they had. And we've upgraded to Read 180 Universal for our Tier 3, which also will provide additional text sets for our most intensive struggling readers. Our professional development plan has been designed to support our schools throughout the year, not just to do the initial rollout. And this is outlined further on this slide. We don't want to just roll out the materials and say to our teachers, here are your materials, now have at it. We've designed a plan that will roll out just in time. Our ELA department is doing weekly Wednesday webinars differentiated by grade level, and they're interactive and they're live, so teachers can log on and actually communicate with a specialist in that area or a regional resource teacher for their grade level. We also, curriculum mapping has been done and completed. We're ready to roll that out in both ELA and math. We have our materials orientation during the pre-planning time for all of our teachers, and all of our schools will receive PLC support. Another area that we're focused on, which we have later today, is the instructional services reorganization, and our goals for that have not changed since that was presented. We really want to look at our organization as a whole so that we can have more clear reporting structures, more accountability structures within our district, and closer communication, monitoring, and feedback. In addition, if you'll recall, last year we had our principals participated in what we call collaborative inquiry cycles during their principals meeting, where they met monthly and they worked as a group to come up with a problem of practice, map out how to solve that, and how to monitor progress towards that. Those meetings will be set up similarly. However, we really want to focus on putting our middle school principals together in those collaborative inquiry groups and have a focus of a common practice, because we can see from our scores that that's going to be necessary, and have it more of a middle school task force type of meeting.
So one of the questions that we've got when we purchased iReady was, is iReady correlated to FSA? And the comment that I would give teachers and principals when we first introduced it was, I don't know yet. Like, I don't like to take vendors' points of research, because a lot of times they've either cherry-picked some data sources or they've done some things. So until the year one rollout, like, we've been hesitant to say 100% certainly, yes, there's a correlation, no. Like, based on the other districts that we talked to, they ran their own analysis, they said yes. Based on even at the state board meeting, they talked about iReady being one of the tools that they use to monitor schools that are D's and F's. But we like to kind of make sure that internally, like, that data is aligned. So what we did was we ran a correlation for ELA, and we ran a correlation for math for the three diagnostic windows. And each one of those correlations came out at a 0.8 or higher. If you know anything on stats, like 0.6 to 0.79 is usually, like, a strong 0.8 or higher is a very strong correlation. So what that is saying is that students who score a low scale score on FSA also score a low score on iReady, and then high FSA scores and then high iReady. So that's all a correlation is looking at, is there a relationship between those two items? And in this case, ELA and in math, there is a strong correlation, very strong correlation between those in each one of those windows. So that was really important for us as we were looking at making that recommendation to continue with that for next year. So another claim that iReady had, and this was kind of like one of their selling points, was that if a student is on mid or above grade level on in their platform, that those students would score level 3 or higher. So like I said before, I don't like to take any claims that a vendor gives me and just run with it and say, yeah, this is the absolute truth. So as soon as FSA scores came out, you know, we took all the data from their platform, we dumped it out. So this is our own internal evaluation, not theirs, and we dumped it out. And then we looked at students who scored mid or above, like they claimed, and then compared that to their actual FSA achievement level and said, is their claim true? And what we found was in ELA and in math, that fell true for every single one of the diagnostics and both of those subjects. Then we also did a breakdown by school to see maybe there were some outliers. And in the majority of cases, every school was at 95% or higher. I think some dipped to like 94%. So, but I can speak to iReady and, you know, talk about all that, but we also thought it was important for an end user, a principal, and their liaison to kind of talk about what it is that iReady has helped them to do this year versus years past. And so we brought Ms. Williams.
At this time, we're going to call up Jennifer Williams, who's the principal at Citrus Grove Elementary, and Beth Harper, specialist in assessment accountability.
Good afternoon, Ms. Williams, Ms. Harper.
Good afternoon.
Glad you're here.
Thank you. Yeah. Again, I'm Beth Harper, and I'm an analyst in digital learning and assessment, and I'm also Citrus Grove's liaison this last year. I'm just going to talk about what I worked with, not only Citrus Grove, but several of the elementary schools. I would say probably the majority of them. You know, iReady was a new product, so the first part was just to administer the diagnostic. And then it was important for them to understand, what does this mean? What do I need to do with this? So our department traveled to PLCs. We tried to target in PLCs where the groups would be smaller and they could ask questions. And just kind of went through the data with the teachers and what it means. And then what it allowed us to do was have follow-ups. So we were able to go back to the school after the second diagnostic and say, okay, what other questions do you have? We're in a new phase of the product implementation. We kind of went through several different new phases as we rolled it out. And then the huge benefit that I could talk with teachers about, you know, last year we talked lowest quartile, lowest quartile, lowest quartile. Well, we can't just say it. You know, what are we going to do? So what's the action plan for that? And iReady allowed us to say our lowest quartile is moving. You know, when they take FSA, they take district assessments. Those are all on grade level standards. So if you have a student that's two grade levels below, it's hard to see progress just using those measures between one and two. But iReady is adaptive, so it actually tests them and gives you their actual level. Not only their overall ELA level or math level, but specifically within the domains. So FSA tells you, yes, they have a comprehension problem. iReady breaks that down further and says it's literary comprehension, it's informational comprehension. And so I was able to work with the teachers on just determining that. And then in their small groups, their intervention teachers, their tutors, they were able to give them information on where the gaps are. So they're not playing detective trying to figure out, you know. I was a fifth grade teacher, and if I had a student that came to me that was below level, well, there are a lot of levels below fifth grade. So I already helped narrow it down. So I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Williams, and she's just going to talk to you about her personal experience with it from the school base.
Good afternoon. We were targeting the lowest quartile. We knew that was the area where we needed to improve upon, and so iReady truly was the tool that helped us identify what that lowest quartile was, not just fourth and fifth grade, but first through fifth grade, because that's what iReady was testing. I can tell you the data was very teacher-friendly, and we would share it in PLCs. They understood it, they grasped it, and they knew what we needed to do. We were able to identify trends by grade level as well as school-wide in order to see where we really needed to focus. For an example, vocabulary. We were deficient in vocabulary through first through fifth grade. That was our area of focus. So we made a lot of school-wide adjustments to make up for that. The majority of the teachers, when we identified our lowest quartile through that first diagnostic, we didn't really know what the numbers meant, what the data was telling us, and it really didn't help us until we started doing those monthly progress monitorings, and that's when we were just monitoring our lowest quartile. But our teachers put so much faith in it, and they appreciated the data so much that they started progress monitoring all of their students. They didn't want to just focus on their lowest quartile. They wanted to focus on every student and wanting every student to move. I can say that iReady helped us diagnose what students were struggling with individually. And so teachers would look at where students were struggling. They would group students together. They would use the teacher toolbox. Or if they identified a standard that was struggling, they would go to SuccessMaker or another online platform and use that as practice to help our students. I can say personally for me, I liked it because I was able to have one tool that was first through fifth grade that everybody could use. Our ESC teachers were a part of it, our ESOL teachers were a part of it, our homeroom teachers were a part of it, and so everybody was on board. I can remember our first third grade PLC, and we saw teachers looking at what grade level their students were listed as by ability. And when they saw that they had some third graders that were on kindergarten and first grade level, it panicked them, but it pushed them, and they knew where they needed to raise that proficiency areas and those proficiency levels. I can say as far as third grade is concerned, there was not a single surprise for a level one student this year. In the past, all 5 years that I've been at Citrus Grove, there's always been a few students. It's like, how did this student score level one? They were never on our radar. And so I can say with utmost confidence, I have met with the majority of my third, fourth, and fifth grade teachers after FSA scores came out, and my academic coaches, with the help of them and Beth Harper, we created reports. We were able to show last year's FSA scores, this year's FSA scores, iReady, Diagnostic 3, and we're really able to see that correlation. And so our teachers really felt like it was a very strong indicator. Sometimes iReady was smarter than we were and predicted where some students might have dropped. But the most part, I would say the biggest part, was that being able to not just do an autopsy at the end of the year, but to have a tool where we could monitor frequently. And so the biggest aha, I think, for us was mid-year in December when we gave our second diagnostic. We gave, so now we have two big, huge data points for ELA and math. And so the goal is that every single student has typical growth, and we want 100% growth per year. So at December, the goal is that every student would be at 50% typical growth. And I can share that that was part of our principal collaborative inquiry session, which Rachel just talked about, is that we looked at every single teacher, ELA and math, and I conferenced with every single teacher that wasn't meeting that typical growth with their students. And we made adjustments, and this is our data. Let's look at it now in December and not in May and June and July when we get FSA. Let's make our changes now. And I can say, of all the teachers that I met with, they worked with our academic coaches, they worked with their team leaders, they worked with their teams, and they made those adjustments. And I truly feel that those conversations and this data that was provided throughout the year helped us move in a trajectory that allowed us to go from a C to a B. We still have work to do, but I know that it was just nice having common language first through fifth grade, because we're not looking at different individual assessments by grade level. And our teachers had confidence in the data that was provided to them. I can also say, you know, I just came off of summer school last week at Woodward, and I'll be finishing up the last 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday, this week. I'm glad that our third graders have had the opportunity to be on iReady all year long and get comfortable with that platform, because that's the alternate test that they take for a good cause if they didn't pass FSA. So now they've had ongoing practice all year long on a site that they're comfortable with, whereas sometimes it's just been a one-shot deal at the end of third grade, and they don't even know the platform, and we're hoping that they do well on it. So I do, you know, all through summer school last week, every time I went into third grade, they're on iReady, they're working the various standards so that they can hopefully go on to fourth grade. And so, you know, giving our students that practice, I think, has been helpful as well. And, you know, at the end of the year, when we looked at our third diagnostic, we had teachers that their classes had 180 to 200% typical growth. I mean, so they moved mountains. And so that's powerful in of itself. And sharing that with our teachers and what they were doing was key in getting them there. If the teachers did the work, they used iReady to help diagnose and help our students.
Well, let me first say congratulations for raising your school's grade from a C to a B. I think the superintendent may have a comment about that as well.
I did. It's not specifically about the raising your school grade, but I'm sure glad you did. And I'm sure glad you described the way in which you did it, which was a partnership between all the support people, the teachers, the administration, all being on the same page with the same data. And I think that is the only way you move schools forward. You can't have progress with one group not in the circle. So it sounds like you did a masterful job in making sure all stakeholders were in the same place. I did want to explain something which I think was a point of misunderstanding in previous discussions in regard to iReady. And I think it's an important distinction based upon my use of the product in another district and based on what I heard at the state meetings in regard to turnaround schools. And I use a little different terminology, so if you'll bear with me on that, I'll try to explain my perspective. When I researched and when I heard a lot of the discussion about iReady, there's two ways iReady can be used. One is a universal screener. And what you just heard described is mostly the use of iReady as a universal screener. That means all students take the same test the same way, and you get data from it. Then you have the other component to iReady, which it would be the curriculum component. That's the students being on a computer for 45 minutes a week. And in other words, the data owns the curriculum owns the data, and you work through that. It has been my experience that that is where the iReady process fell short. In other words, where it was tried, and we had a lot of voluntary implementation in another place and compared, and what we found was that the iReady data was good, but following their prescribed curriculum didn't get us the results we expected. So almost all the people, well, I will say this, all the principals who had attempted that as a pilot did not repurchase it the next year, but they all wanted the iReady data. They just wanted to apply it to a more regularized curriculum process that had greater involvement, direct involvement of teachers. So my support of iReady is mostly as a universal screener in which we now use our curriculum supported by the new instructional materials as the basis of curriculum, not depending upon a purchase of iReady to use in a computer-based system. When you talk about progress monitoring, often people use those two phrases interchangeably. And I don't in this sense. When you have a progress monitoring system, if you use iReady as the universal screener, then use their curriculum for progress monitoring, that would be a progress monitoring system. And so I'm not asking for that or support of that because I haven't seen that work well. What I have seen work well is using iReady as the universal screener, then applying that information with teachers and a team that's all pulling in the same direction with good curriculum available. And within that curriculum, we have some assessments established and denoted and scheduled that come directly from that curriculum and use the two things in concert. And that is where I have seen this become very effective. So I just wanted you to recognize the difference between what I view as a universal screener versus a complete progress monitoring system, which in essence gives away the curriculum function to a purchased third-party product.
And that would indeed be the model that we're going to.
The model of a universal screener.
Universal screener.
I'm referencing.
Yes. Yes, okay.
And then
and then using the Wonders as our curriculum instructional materials with the unit assessments that go with that.
That's correct. These next two slides for both elementary and secondary describe a plan just as that. Now, in addition, based on the board feedback, for other tests that teachers would give or classroom assessments, school-based assessments, we would ask for the schools to submit those plans to us so that we have an understanding of school by school, because there is some confusion about what qualifies as an assessment. But as far as district-mandated assessments, and of course you need additional assessments for grading purposes as well, that is exactly what we've mapped out. And here is the elementary example, where we have the Wonders unit assessments two times a year. That's our ELA curriculum materials, iReady three times. For math, the Envision topic assessments three times a year, iReady three times a year. And then science has not changed from our last conversation. And then secondary follows the same.
Yeah. The same idea of having the district interim assessments, and then for ELA, it's FAIR would be that universal screener where they can have the conversation from 6th to 10th grade to have that same conversation that I already had in there.
So now we will pause for any questions that you
have.
I think
he had one.
I do, and Mr. Edgar and I have spoken about this, and so I think that, thank you for sharing your story with us, and I think that one of the things that had made you successful is that you did take advantage of all of the help that was available. I don't know if every school has a Beth Harper, but it sounds like she's all over the numbers and the data. And so, you know, one of the things I want to make sure that the schools in my district, and I'm sure everybody else will feel the same, is that they are receptive to the help of the folks who have the data, because, you know, 97% predicted value, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got some schools in my district that are very challenged, and I'd like to know that, you know, they don't have a choice but to be receptive to this data. And if, you know, because this is what's going to predict our student success. And those are, I guess this is for the superintendent, because, you know, a lot of our principals are not elementary principals, and so we need them to understand that, you know, these folks are here to help you, and this is what's going to make us successful. And we know that if we do this, this is likely going to be the outcome.
Mr. Superintendent?
Yes, thank you. And we have discussed this, and just so you know, this conversation has already taken place with principals, and it's not something I'm saying I'll do after we leave here. I had a conference call with all the principals last week, and I explained that our new methodology was going to be, you cannot opt out from the basic curriculum plan. In other words, the assessments will be administered, the ones that the district has established will be administered, and more importantly, used for instruction. Now, the used for instruction part, what you can never do, and you hear me say this all the time, you can never principal-proof a school or teacher-proof a classroom. And teachers have to have a high degree of autonomy in how they do the mission. As long as they're using high-yield instructional strategies, that's what we want to see, and I think they'll be effective. But as far as being receptive to the data that's learned from this process, this mapped process, using that data to guide their instruction, there will not be an opportunity to opt out of that as we have and sometimes had in the past, because that is an idea, and I've always stated this, if the principal has a better idea and a better way of doing it, and they do it and it works, then we should pay attention. I think our data being so stagnant would indicate that the opt-out principle for some of these activities has not been the most effective. So we need to, now that we have the instructional materials in place, now that we have a good universal screener, by the way, the universal screener also comes with a toolbox with that purchase. So while it's not the whole curriculum, the teachers will also have the toolbox resources along with what comes with the instructional materials so that they can attack an issue with an individual student on two fronts. But at the end of the day, the plan is going to be monitored for implementation. And to the degree that you could do something else, I see very little margin for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
Eric? Board members, let me ask you, it's 12:45. We have a school board meeting, starts at 2. I know we haven't had a break of any kind. Tell me what you would prefer to do, and if you want to have a lunch break, tell me the time frame you want to have it. And we have, two or three items here to go through. So
can we
talk to me. Talk to me.
Can we put those to the next workshop and just time certain or 2 o'clock and take an hour break? I mean, I don't mind sitting through here, but one of them is very short, and I think that was based on a question I asked, which is the travel, the fiscal transparency.
The fiscal transparency.
And then EOC, we can talk about that.
Who is it that's speaking to this one?
Fiscal, that would be
transparency. Did you say that was a 5-minute presentation? Come on.
Let's knock that one out.
5 minutes. 5 minutes sounds real good right now, so come on down.
So if I understand, we're contemplating doing this and then moving the other items to this afternoon?
That would leave us with what? EOC?
Correct.
Recommendation in real estate?
Correct.
Transactions?
If that's possible.
Yeah.
I wanted to alert staff to that so that they know, once they know the time of the break, they'll know to come back for the 2 o'clock meeting, even if they were not originally scheduled.
Yeah.
So if there's anybody that wasn't expecting that, somebody contact them, please. Thank you.
Thank you. If y'all could introduce yourselves with your titles, please.
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, board members, and Mr. Superintendent. I'm Deb Muller, the Chief Financial Officer, and we have our General Counsel, Stacey Manning, with us as well. We just wanted to quickly address something that was actually passed in the 2018 legislative session but didn't take effect until July 1st of this year, because it does affect the board as well as what happens at our board meetings. So that is House Bill 1279, which was related to fiscal transparency. So the purpose of the legislation, and it contained other areas as well, but was to increase fiscal transparency within districts and provide for additional accountability by districts to the public. So prior to July 1st of this year, then you would just travel as you would for your different conferences and other board business, and it would be approved as an expense report. But any travel that was outside the district would still be governed by state Board of Education rules. So effective July 1st of this year, the change is that all district travel out of the county by any school board member would require prior approval, and if it exceeded $500, okay? So that means that it would need to come before the board on, as an agenda item. And additionally, any request that was for out-of-state travel would have to be itemized by type of expenditure and, again, brought to the board for prior approval before you travel. The other aspect of it, as I mentioned, that has to do with the board meetings is there has to be public input before you vote on any of these specific travel agenda items as well. Okay? And I know that we have been working with Mr. Manning, and I'll let him explain what he has done to that extent to assist you in bringing these items forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members, Mr. Superintendent. I did send a memo over to Mr. Dorn earlier this month, a week or two ago, basically outlining the new process. Just for a little bit of clarification, again, it does require board action. If it exceeds $500 outside of the district, the travel, it is not technically an approval that the board gives. It's just confirming a couple of things. When you see these, they will come to you, and it was just confirmation by the board that the travel is for official business of the district and that it complies with rules of the State Board of Education. So it's a slightly different take on what the board's action would be on those. There must be an opportunity for the public to speak. So these would be set up as individual action items coming before the board, and public would have an opportunity to speak on those before voting on confirmation. And then we did suggest as a possible way of kind of assisting in this process that there's a lot of travel that you all go to on a regular basis every year. And that we know, you know, it's not hard to get over $500 once you figure your, you know, transportation costs and your hotel and your food and whatnot. So for those where they are in state, it could be handled as a single agenda item at the beginning of the year at some particular time you all choose, and you would list all those that you all are planning on going to. And those could be handled all as a single item. Anything else that's out of state, those have to be handled as individual separate items. And one of the reasons is because those require a detailed itemization of what the costs are going to be. I suspect in most cases you're going to have that anyways, no matter if it's just outside of the district or outside of the state. It's probably going to be just common practice, but just wanted to let you know that. And again, we've got to be cognizant of our normal advertising and publishing the agenda schedules, so you kind of be thinking about these things ahead of time because staff does have some lag time required to get things advertised in the newspaper and get them on the agenda and get them out, especially those that do require public participation as well. And again, I have provided Mr. Dorn a memo. He may have shared it with you. If not, I'm sure he'd be happy to provide it, and he can answer any further questions you may have.
Mr. Manning, thank you. Ms. Miller, thank you. So then, could you, are you planning then to put this on an upcoming agenda? Because typically, we have Florida School Board Association meetings in November and then again in June. Those are the two that you can just count on every year. So if you could get at least those on an upcoming agenda. And are there others? That
September, whoever's on the board of directors, there's two other meetings.
There we go. So September.
February's legislation.
And February. So there's more. So if you could just... Again, those could all be on one.
September and October also have the financial pieces that they've now added. I looked yesterday.
Okay, good. But it's they're all Florida School Board Association activities.
Yes, and what we would recommend is that Denise work with each of you to see if there are any individual individual events that you might attend and then make a list that's comprehensive, and then that could be shared with you as well so that you know if you have anything else that does come up that we would need to add that.
Okay.
And again, 2 weeks prior, we have the deadline before the agenda is finalized, and then 1 week before it's made public. So we would have to make sure that we adhere to those deadlines.
Okay, so just to summarize, so each of us then will let Denise Dietrich know what travel you expect to make this upcoming school year, and then you'll get it from Denise. It'll be on the board's agenda, and fine. Sounds like a plan.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, then. We're going to recess this, and we'll be back. Actually, we're going to adjourn this one, and we'll come back at 2:00.